Lungs can grab a water.
I'm drinking this peach mango energy drink that I got in like a one of those like box a month boxes. It ain't good.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Scotchcast. My name is Conrad Kirby, also known as Thurbleton. And joining with me today, we have a pretty large table set aside today for talking about video games and such. But yeah, going around, we have Self-Confessed Cynic is joining me, as always.
Hello!
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
No, I'm good. I'm just kind of shocked at how many people are on this fucking episode.
Yeah, it is impressive. Okay, so we'll do this a different way.
It's not just us two. We're the only people who've talked, so it's really confusing.
We'll back this up. So, Cynic, what time is it for you?
Midnight. So 12:30.
All right, for me it's 7. We'll go around time zone wise. It's 7 in the morning. Next person up would be Mr. Squiddle.
Hi. Yes. 9:30 a.m. my time.
Yeah, we have our, you're a reporter on the ground for the Hurricane Harvey coverage. I heard you presumably got in a boat to get some breakfast. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I had to don my life preserver and swim upstream to the taco hut. Unfortunately, we have monsoon winds at about 35 miles an hour right now. I just saw a car fly by with a cat tied to it. John, do you want to go help them? Okay, go. Thank you. I got it. Okay. So anyway, we'll report back on that car here momentarily. Hopefully everything is okay.
Oh, yeah. We'll continue the story as it develops. But yeah, moving up the time slots, next up is Shinboy. Wait, what? Shinboy?
I'm here.
Hey.
I'm free. I'm free from my jackhammer hell because every morning for the past 2 weeks, they've been doing road work outside my apartment.
Well, we are
and
getting...
my alarm clock has been a jackhammer.
We've been getting away from summer, which is that's the seasonal, that's the home time. Home, what's the animalistic
what a season.
Term? Yes, what a season it's been. and then rounding out on
in heat? Are the drills in heat?
That's the great.
Sure,
the best
sounds
analogy.
Like it. Huh.
Let's finishing off this little. Cross-continental podcast recording.
Migration. That doesn't fit either.
No. Ballard, how you doing?
Howdy. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, it's... Nice. Time check-in. It's 3:30 in the afternoon.
So you get the easy part of all of this.
And yeah, this is great for me, guys.
Usually I get his slot where it's like fucking 1 p.m. or something.
Yeah. but yeah, we're trying our best to make it work with everyone's work-life balances. But yeah, we're going to talk about some news that happened in the video game industry, a couple of news things, and then...
I really fucking hope... You know how, like, usually, you can slowly watch the sun go down while we're recording? Mm-hmm. I really hope the sun doesn't come up while we're fucking recording this episode.
And that's why I'm hosting this and not you, so hopefully we can power through some of this stuff. But yeah, let's just jump right into the news. So everyone's very excited to get that SNES Classic Edition, the original SNES the original NES from last Christmas, last holiday season was a highly sought after item by scalpers on eBay.
So you're talking about the thing I pre-ordered like 2 months ago now, yeah? That thing?
Oh, well, that was cold. Ice cold.
Ice fucking cold. I mean, I have one. I have a pre-order in, too. It's a bit weird. It uses an Xbox One controller, which is kind of strange.
Okay. It's got a weird Raspberry picture on it as well. Yeah. I don't know as well.
See, I just take my class.
Delivered straight from Taiwan.
I take my approach, which I like to brag about. I just call my aunt and say, can you pick me one up from the Nintendo store?
Did you actually do that?
Fuck you, Squiddle.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's how he did that last... Yep, mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
He's got somebody on the inside.
I don't know which of you two is worse. To be Fair, I don't want one, but I feel really sad for everyone who actually does who's listening.
To be fair, Nintendo employees can only purchase two. That's all they can purchase.
Only two.
So it's not like they can buy an entire. Like when I went there, there was a pallet of these NESs that you couldn't find anywhere, and I was like, "Damn, that's pretty nice." See, just a pallet laying there of all of them, the beautiful shiny boxes.
Cash but yes, money.
Some people are having trouble with finding one. That is like so. Okay.
The yes.
Yeah.
You can buy two, but when they only make two,
yeah.
Kinda...
Well,
they made three total. There's been a lot of people wanting to get this to the point that I believe what Amazon originally was they put up erroneously on their website and people bought it and then they had to cancel all the orders.
That was Walmart, wasn't it?
Walmart. Yeah.
Walmart sucks. I had trouble with Walmart getting my Switch.
That's fair.
I ordered one. This was not like a pre-order or anything. This was like last month. I ordered one and then it was like, your order is going to be delayed. I'm like, well, why? You said you had it in stock. So I talked to support and was like, yeah, we're going to have to look in a different shipping center. Like, not my fault you oversold the warehouse. But I eventually got it. Walmart sucks. To anyone listening, Walmart sucks.
All of the box retailers are having to adjust to being an online store.
Yeah.
But yeah, they definitely suck. I will agree with you on that. But yeah,
you know, right now the best place to be would be on the coastal side of Texas, and you could just raid a store, get in the system, put in your pre-order, like I'm pre-ordering this, and then get out because they're gone. They've evacuated. So you know, all you gotta do is be able to do that. And you're good.
Yeah, just put your name down as Harvey and everything's fine.
That's right. Harvey Dent. Yes, that's my name.
Harvey's my last name. What's your first name? Steve?
Hurricane.
Oh, the fun times.
Yes, the fun times with Steve Harvey and Family Feud. But yeah, I guess this... Does anybody want, like...
Is that what that was a reference to? I had not the whole... Except for the Harvey Dent thing, which was clearly Batman, everything else fucking just went straight over my fucking head. Like, fuck you, random American TV show bullshit.
I don't like Harvey.
I'm trying to keep this together.
Don't get angry.
Who put the SNES Classic Edition sold out on the news topics? Does anybody want to talk about this? But I feel like it's a thing that everyone knows because everyone's trying to get one or know somebody who's trying to get one.
If you're the type of person that is listening to a video game podcast, you know all about the SNES Classic situation, one would think.
Yeah, we can.
I will say I am clearly not in the boat of all the people that think that they hate Nintendo for doing this. I think
you're in the boat that you need to be in. You're the boat that you need to be in because of the rain.
Well, damn it.
I just wanted to let people know that I have one. So.
And I'm happy for you, sir. But we'll sail through this sea.
Yep.
Keep moving. Eastern
Shore. Harvey will be with us forever.
Kiwami 2, baby. I don't know what this is.
2, so. Baby?
Oh, yeah. Yakuza 2.
I guess it's just
Hell yeah.
Is that just Yakuza 2 like they're doing Yakuza 1?
Yes.
Yes.
I think, yeah, okay.
That's cool.
That's great.
That's awesome. Cool. That's all I need to say. That's fucking cool. I'm happy that's happening. It was leaked, but it's happening.
That's awesome.
I never got into the Yakuza. I never got into any of the Yakuza stuff, but I liked Zero from what I saw, and I'm hoping they keep going down this route of doing remakes.
I need to get back to Zero. I played a little bit of it. I haven't played a ton. I played up to the first character switch and through like the opening of the casino or whatever the hell that thing is. That character's introduction.
I mean, like, do you feel just waiting for these remakes to come out is the way to do it rather than like people who did like Zero?
At this point, totally. Since it seems like they're going to make more of them outside of just one. Might as well just wait it out because they're not exactly short games anyway. Like they're kind of lengthy, so you might as well just take your time and play through these remakes and hope that they come up with more of them.
They're doing a lot of remakes. I mean, there was the thing of like Uprises, a couple years back, and like everything being ported to the new, like the current generation. But now there's just a ton of remakes going on. But like Secret of Mana remake is apparently out, and it looks horrible. Is the next thing
it
we have here?
Absolutely dreadful. I don't understand the people who say they like it and the look of it. I don't know. I also, the second thing I don't understand is why it exists.
I mean, why it exists is so they, one, they can make money.
But yeah, they just re-released that game. I know it was only in Japan, but on Switch. It was a bundle.
Because I haven't actually heard about that.
Some other weird stuff. I think it's coming to an 8. I can't remember.
Can we just real quick, since I always want to mention how shit GameSpot's, I want to click on a picture to see an images, and I get this whole layup over everything I'm looking at. It's really bad.
Well, all their good people went to Twitch. So, yeah, I mean, like, it's understand there's no engineers left who can make a... Well, no, I'm not going to completely knock the GameSpot.
It feels almost like... It's a strange thing where, like, it was almost like corporate poaching. Like, they just all suddenly left and to all the same place. Like, freaking Alexis, Mary Kish, like, so many GameStop people just went to Twitch. That was so random.
It's kind of like what happened with, like, Amazon and a bunch of people up in Seattle, like, from ArenaNet or from other companies. Like, hey, we all just work for Amazon now.
Yep. A little weird.
See, it's weird. So they keep sounds, so they're remaking.
It feels, like, illegal.
I mean, with the remake of Secret of Mana, you know, there's so many other games that I remember playing on the SNES that I absolutely loved. And I guess I was just I had the rare games that never really got popular, probably because my aunt sent them to me and got them for free. I can't think of, what was it, one of them I'm trying to bring up right now that I had on my phone, because it reminded me of Illusion of Gaia and like that range of games, Soul Blazer. Like, those games I wish would come out and remake, but, like, nobody knows of them or likes them. But it's...
No.
They're so good, though. The music was amazing in those games.
But, like, the weird thing is, I don't... My issue isn't the fact that Secret of Mana is being remade, because I knew that game as Seiken Densetsu 2, or the fuck it was, or 3, when I was a kid, because I fucking emulated the shit out of it when I first discovered Emulation, and it was one of my favorite RPGs of all time till I was like 10 years old or something.
Continue.
I was young. But like, I have no issue that Secret Mana is being remade. The problem is, like, it does look... I just hate the art style they went with. It looks fucking terrible.
Well,
it's based
on the assets for what the hell did they call it? It was the first. I think it was the first game that came out on mobile last year.
Right.
God. I forgot what the English translation, because it is something of Mana, like all those games are. Mm. But it came out on mobile last year, and they're sort of retouching those assets.
Great. It's weird because it's not necessarily the quality of the assets. Like, there's a game that'll come out later this show, Final Fantasy 15, that does look kind of cute and adorable that I could totally get behind. This just kind of just looks bad. I don't know.
I have no real beef with the look. I'm not out here saying it looks great, but it's like, yeah, it looks like a game. I don't know.
Is anyone here?
I like the user interface.
I'm interested in playing it. That's what you were getting.
Okay.
It's like, the reason I don't like Secret of Mana is because I think the action combat works really terribly on a D-pad.
Right. Isn't going to be in a touchscreen now?
No, because it's coming out on, like, modern shit.
PC as well. Well, yeah,
it's coming out on, like, PS4, like, PS4, Windows, and Vita. So, like, I'll be able to use a proper controller.
Man. Yeah, okay. All right. Maybe my like initial extreme hatred towards it was relatively unfounded, aside from the look.
Like, I'm not going to pay $40 for it. That's for damn sure.
Fuck. Is that what it's going for?
Yeah. No, they had the price up in yen in the trailer, and it converts to roughly $40.
Fuck that.
That's a little steep.
I'd give them 15. Maximum. Oh man.
How much would you give? And this is probably going to be a different price. I can already know this is going to be different prices for different people on this podcast. How much would you give for a Shenmue 3 game?
$500.
Amazing music.
You would have to pay $500. Yep.
Amazing music.
I think that I really want to hear Squiddle's thoughts on this one specifically. Like, as the local Shenmue guy, what did you feel when you saw this trailer?
I had to go change my pants.
But that was the floodwaters are rising. That's what that was.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yes. hyperbole aside. Okay. I thought it didn't look as good as I was hoping it would. I thought that, and since I can't remember all the names of all the characters, I thought the girl looked very pretty, and I thought the dude looked like he was just out of Dreamcast. So, like, they didn't do anything so far to really make him look more modern. But I fucking love the music.
You know what that looks like to me? Like a Target render from like the early 2000s.
Yeah,
exactly.
Where everything's a bit shiny.
Yeah, like the perfect era.
But I still like that they're just trying to keep the original style of Shenmue, which I appreciate that. That's kind of nice. They're not trying to
the iconic style.
Let's say, yeah, it is. It's an iconic style. Don't argue with that. Come on now. Not saying it's a good style, but I'll go with iconic.
Aiden Pierce's iconic hat.
It's interesting because when the trailer booted up, it had a copyright Sega at the bottom of it. And I think what I heard was that the music from the trailer is actually from Shenmue 2. So like the things that are new in the trailer is just, it's kind of more like a demo of their environments and the reason I didn't necessarily write in my little summary here on the Google Doc, and the characters look terrible, I didn't write that because they're placeholder, apparently. That they said they took out facial animations, they took out, there's like various elements that they, like, of the actual character modeling that aren't implemented yet in this version. So you can see, like, the characters look fucking way worse than the environments that they're in. And it's for that reason. So, if anything, it was just more of a demonstration of the environments. And
I am really curious to see how they implement a new style QTE thing, or if they even go with that. I don't know. I think they'd have to, but I don't know what they would do.
Ditch QTEs.
I don't know how you would do that in this game. Like, I want to see how they would. Like, can you give me an example of a game that's current that could have used QTEs but didn't? Because I can't think of a way to do that style of storytelling without it. That's where I'm at.
Wait, what style are we talking about though? Like
QTEs
do you need?
I mean, like, the best analogy I can make is, like, if you want games that try and take the act of, like, not shooting a gun, but, like, interacting with things that you would in real life, rather than just make it a QTE, make it something, like, especially if, have they said what, like, well, I don't know if you do this for console as well as for PC, but, like, Cook Serve Delicious does an excellent job of, like, what it's like to be, like, at a restaurant or whatever, like during the dinner rush. Flight Sims, like the super advanced ones, like, oh, you need to press 20 buttons. So rather than a quick time event, it's maybe like, you know, a long time, like it's a regular current time event of like, oh, instead of pressing 3 buttons, you're pressing every button on the controller to drive a forklift at normal speed rather than like quick actions.
So I think I just got, like, from what you were saying there, I think I figured out the best way they could implement this. If it was done all in VR and you had hand control, hand controls to do it, like to do things, that would be a way to do non-QTE in QTE in a non-QTE world nowadays.
Look for the Shenmue 4 Kickstarter for VR only coming soon.
Okay, wait. Because, all right.
Okay, if you're fighting someone, like,
I can't see anything in Yakuza that, aside from like in the middle of a fight scene to just the last couple moments of a fight, that would even remotely need QTEs. Like, Yakuza 0, they just built everything into mini games and like actual controls, some of which are only valid for certain sequences, but they have full control schemes. Like, I don't really get the need for, again, outside of those very the specific cinematic moments, I do not see the need for QTEs in this game.
But like when you're dodging out of the way, okay, in a cinematic moment when you have to dodge because somebody threw a cart in front of you,
yeah.
How do you represent that without a QTE? And that's in VR, you could just, I step to the side, you know, or I do this. Yeah. Like that would be kind of neat. Or let's say maybe not with the VR goggles. Let's say maybe just with motion hand tracking. If you could do just that, that'd be kind of cool. But that's, you know,
like the Wii, sure.
But not as shitty as the Wii. Like with take any of the controllers that are VR controllers, take the mask off, have the sensors. And at times you play with those for, I know that's dumb as well, but I don't know. I'm shotgunning here. I'm trying to figure this out. So
I'm trying to solve the mystery of how to make QTEs not terrible.
Yes, that's it's a brainstorm for the century.
People have been trying that for decades at this point.
For a very long time.
Yeah, very long time. Ever since Shenmue, really. Yeah,
oddly enough.
And we will keep watching this story and Shenmue 3's development as it progresses. But yeah, that's just check out that new trailer if you want to hear some amazing music. Moving on
or
to
also
other
just
things.
Play Shenmue 2, apparently. Yeah.
Or just look up the Shenmue 2 OST or, on YouTube.
Yeah, so there's probably a 10-hour loop of it somewhere.
I would pretty much just watch the endurance run and stop there. I don't know if Shenmue 2 is really worth going back to, honestly.
It is.
Especially with
it
Yakuza
is.
Out
I wish
there.
I want them to do it. They need to finish that and do that.
Finish the fight. And that's what they say.
Shenmue 3, finish the fight. That's the subtitle for the game.
When you start taking the pills, you finish the bottle.
Oh, no. Didn't move aside. Oh, that's not how bad advice.
Don't finish the bottle. Just take what is up to the maximum dose for daily. You might, if you mm-hmm. do take the whole bottle, you know what happens, right? You end up becoming a biomutant.
Oh, wow. Well,
you overdose on your biotics. From a best here.
I thought this looked really
this
cool.
This boat's rocking.
Like, in an era where we've stopped having cutesy heroes for games, having one back kind of feels right somehow. It feels like we're returning to the Jack era or something.
So yeah, I guess, Cynic, what is Biomutant?
So it's from people who worked on Just Cause, from memory, the actual dev team. I think it's a new studio. No, it's THQ Nordic, but it might be a new studio within THQ Nordic. But the devs were ex-Just Cause people. It was revealed, and I think it was a pre-roll trailer to either the Microsoft press conference or the EA press conference during Gamescom. Like, it wasn't even during either of the conferences. But it was actually like one of the more interesting things people saw that whole night, somewhat earnedly, because it was revealed as a CG trailer. That was more of a tone piece. But it follows a little raccoon dude who's very similar to like Rocket Raccoon, who has like a sweet ass pistol and a sweet ass sword. And he goes around like fighting dudes. It's set in the world somewhat like a, what's some of the equivalent? I don't know. It's anthropomorphic. Everything is part human, part animal, and there's all different kinds of animals, so he's fighting like a gorilla thing or something.
So this is my canonical Animorphs future I've been running money for.
Yeah, sure. Like Jake and whatever, Cassie.
Like the aliens have landed
together.
The centaur or whatever is somewhere on the planet. Oh, there's a human mm-hmm. there too, though.
Andalites? Was that their name?
I don't remember.
Hmm.
I will say, Animorphs aside, this game, like, it feels like it's pulling from a lot of interesting, like, different sources that you've not historically seen brought together. That is to say, like, the combat reminds me a lot of, like, pre-DMC Devil May Cry kind of stuff, and that, like, you have the dual pistols, and then you can go in and do, like, action swings. The visual effects are like that of a comic book, or maybe even, like, the Batman TV show from the 80s, 70s, 80s? Mm. Adam West era. Because you see like the pow, thwack, like that stuff pops up, which is nice. And it is very vibrant colors, which is like, you know, you associate with comic books. But then the actual like level of detail, as well as the whole anthropomorphic stuff, it's just like, are they pulling from like Japanese culture? I guess like when I think about games with anthropomorphic people, it almost always goes to like Japanese RPGs and MMOs.
Well, he apparently goes to like various masters around the world and learns their secret. Like, I think the word they use was wushu, but that doesn't make sense because he's using a sword. I don't know. Maybe there's parts of wushu that use a sword, but his sword isn't exactly a broadsword or anything. But anyway, it seems very influenced by Asian shit because he goes around learning stuff from masters around the world. I think that's part of it. Yes.
It's a very interesting game. I don't know if this 11-minute like video that they released during Gamescom like is enough to sell me on it, but it's definitely something that I'll like keep looking at.
I had not even seen anything, and I'm watching this video now, and it looks all right. I'm not sure I would say it looks more than that, but it looks all right.
Exactly.
I like the branching path
animation.
I like the branching path choices that seem to make an effect or difference within
the
game.
You know. THQ doing stuff again.
Sure.
THQ Nordic, but yeah.
THQ Interactive Nordic. Let's just go full on rebrand.
The toy headquarters.
Yes. So yeah, I think that's the one we want to highlight that because that's the one like, you know, brief spot of something new in a sea of continuing a series, remaking a series, upresing a series, but an acclaimed series like Age of Empires, what if you guys heard about a fourth one of those?
It was funny because I don't really have any real affinity for Age of Empires, not out of dislike for the series, just haven't really played them. So my reaction when I watched the trailer was like, oh, hey, it's Charles Dance.
Is that the VO?
Yes, that is the VO.
Man. He does a good job, you know.
He does. He's Charles Dance, of course he does.
I was expecting some gameplay, but we didn't get any of that.
No, it was just a cinematic thing. As someone who also doesn't have a huge history with the Age of Empires franchise, I think the most interesting thing for me coming out of this was the cool History of Age of Empires video they did. I don't know if anyone saw that.
Oh, I did see that. I had not watched it, but I did see that it was a thing they did.
Yeah, so they did basically a 10-minute documentary on the making of the Age of Empires franchise and how the studio grew and stuff. It was actually really well made, surprisingly.
Yeah, if you're watching it on their YouTube channel, it's pretty much the post-roll, if you have autoplay turned on, just immediately switches to that. It's kind of interesting, though, because they talk about the original developer as if they're dead, and I don't know if they are or not. Maybe they were. What was it? Arcane or something that used to do Age of Empires. It was well made, but it sounded odd. It sounded odd, especially since they're making another one. I mean,
it's also kind of a thing of like, are the original people who made Age of Empires dead?
Are like, they?
I don't think so, but they might be retired by now. Age of Empires has been a long running thing. Like I remember playing 2 when I was in like school, like the. Not
Ensemble Studios. Yes, that's the one.
Grade school, middle school, stuff like that. Primary school.
1997, motherfuckers. That's fucking wow.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
But yeah, it's. I'm excited for the idea of someone else. Like you know, there are so few RTSs out these days. That like sure anybody making a new one that they've got my interest. I'll see what's up. I think that in order to be good, they have to realize that like there's the hardcore RTS that people want to do like you know big multiplayer matches and all that. They've all left to play MOBAs like it's League of Legends and all that the RTS's dinner when those games came out. So like really. I think the only audience left is the one that just likes doing a fun, easy single player thing. Like there's nobody wants a super hard RTS these days.
That's always been strange to me because like the appeal of competitive RTS has always been like a long drawn out one-on-one battle. and MOBAs are very much a team thing. So I'm like, you're right that they did sort of like steal that audience. I'm just surprised that they did.
I think it's because they're way more approachable. Like, yeah, you know, your Dota and your League do have a lot of obscure mechanics that don't make a lot of sense, that make it hard to maybe get into at first. But like the sort of skill level of like the basic level of being able to play the game requires a lot less. You're controlling one unit. You get the same experience, you get the same perspective, you get the same, not the same strategies, but you get strategic play, but it's a lot easier to get into in terms of gameplay.
And also, like, it's from the beginning, I guess, from like StarCraft 1, you had people like, oh, well, in order to be really good, like the highlighted of like, oh, what is good multiplayer? It's people who can like micro and do 100 like interactions in the course of a minute. And granted, StarCraft 2 streamlined a lot of that stuff with like keybind, like buttons you can press when you just click on a building and have things built with a press rather than a click. But to somebody who doesn't know that those systems are in place, it just seems like even more wizardry. And so I feel to get into MOBAs, an easier, like, it might be a longer journey to go through that doorway, but to get that first step in is an easier task than trying to, like, get into an RTS. But, I mean, Age of Empires has definitely felt like, you know, one of the more easier to approach of those RTS genres. Like, you know, I'd say it's more easier to a beginner than, like, a Command & Conquer, maybe we'll say. Just in that, like, you don't have to know what tank it is. You just have to know, oh, this guy has a sword. Or this guy has a bow and arrow. And it's like, oh, okay, I know what this guy does. And so, yeah, I think Age of Empires might do well. We'll see. It's weird to see Windows making games.
It's crazy that there are more Windows-exclusive games made by Microsoft than there are Xbox-exclusive games made by Microsoft.
Well, it's because all the Xbox-exclusive games are out on Windows anyway.
Exactly. There is now one more Windows.
1-0.
Yeah.
At this point, we could say there are infinitely more Windows exclusive because math.
Exactly. And it's just going to grow from here. Like someday they'll make AOE 5. And there you go. 2.
I mean, someday they'll start making games for Windows phones, too. Phones and other games, Final Fantasy 15 coming to PC. Assuming you have a hard drive big enough for it. But also, they got that mobile edition. And I'm curious if Squiddle has played around with that mobile edition. Sorry, pocket edition.
I want to clear the air before we dig into this. 170 gig thing was a miscommunication through translation.
Yeah.
So it's not actually 170 gigs.
Also, wasn't there another weird thing that came out of that said, like, the minimum spec for the graphics card was a 1080 Ti or something stupid?
Yeah, they confused what the minimum specs were going to be for what the machines currently running the demo were using.
Yeah.
So that's when you had articles saying, like, oh, and you need 170 gigs and a 1080 Ti. It's like, no, that's just what the PCs running the thing have.
Yeah.
I see. Exactly. Do we know what the... And I think the install base is.
PCs running them were at 4K, weren't they? So you do need that for 4K, but you don't need that for fucking...
Yeah, not to just run the game.
No.
And we don't know what the download size will actually end up being. At least I don't...
Yeah, they're probably running full-on compressed everything, because they need run compression against games. Well, Brad could probably elucidate more on this, but to my understanding, they only run compression to the assets in the final stages before we press the game to gold.
I mean, when you're actually playing, I'm not going to comment on that. I don't know what they do with their engine.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, like, we've seen, big PC games getting ported to console, and I don't really think the Pocket Edition is necessarily a Final Fantasy 15 version as much as just, like, it's got the same characters. But
Pocket Edition is the coolest fucking thing I've heard of in a while. Like, I actually wouldn't mind if more games fucking did it. Like, it's kind of great in a crazy way. It's got the whole story. It's broken up into 10 chapters. It's got the entire story from the game. It has the same characters and cutscenes with the same direction from the game, but it's all in chibi. And it's all, sorry, and it uses the same fucking VO from the actual final release game. So they've redone the art style and redone the combat from the looks of things, maybe simplified it as slightly. But besides that, it's like the whole game. And I would actually mind to see seeing FF, you know, 12 or 10 done the same way. It's kind of adorable, and I wouldn't mind having that stuff on the go. It's kind of cool.
10 would actually probably work all right since it's turn based anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. About the Pocket Edition, that's the thing that's coming to Switch, surely, right? Have you guys seen this?
Oh God, I have no idea.
Apparently, Final Fantasy XV in some form is coming to the Nintendo Switch, and I cannot imagine it's actual Final Fantasy XV.
It can't. That could not run on the Switch. Like, it barely runs on the PS4 Pro.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> That's my thought. So it must be the Pocket Edition that's going to be coming.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of things that got universally
panned. Probably a good fit.
Panned in the YouTube comments, just like Shenmue 3 trailer did. The trailer for the Final Fantasy Pocket Edition, there are some very unhappy people who have already purchased it on console.
Those guys.
But whatever. I don't understand the anger. It's not taking anything away from the base.
They seemed very intent on pointing out that they didn't think Final Fantasy 15 was finished and or in a good state.
That game's fine.
Oh, that's absolutely fair.
I think as of now, that game's fine. As someone who still loads that game up occasionally because I'm like 3 trophies away from the platinum.
Damn.
It's all the BS ones. I just need to level up like fishing, cooking, and whichever one requires you to run a whole lot.
Oh, fuck. What are you doing, Shaboy?
Because that game's not super long, right?
So No, it's not.
You get most of the trophies just by playing through it. By the time I finished the story of that game, the only trophies I needed were like, I needed to do like 4 more side quests, get like 3 more of the like the weapons that you get from doing the dungeons, and then all the like skills. So I'm like, I might as well do this. I like that game well enough.
I like that game a whole lot. They had a remix of some of the music in the trailer for the Pocket Edition, and I wouldn't mind hearing like cuter remixes of the same like music in from the main game, like because like aside from the Nebu Uematsu stuff from maybe FF10, I would say that Final Fantasy 15 probably is my favorite music of the whole series. I love Somnus. I love the whole every remix they made of Somnus game.
I was discussing that with some people. Were like, regardless of how bad you think a Final Fantasy game is, even if you hate like 13 or 15, like the one thing they almost always nail is the music.
Hell yeah. And it's no exceptions. As I said, like maybe it's 10 chapters, and so that means they'll probably edit it down a bit. And you know what? That game needs a little bit of editing. And I think the director was caught saying that they want to flesh out more of Luna's story. And that's exactly what the game needed. It needs more of Luna in it.
Yeah.
The Pocket Edition could be the definitive edition. I don't know.
Weird. What a weird sentence that is.
You know, it's been done before. Persona 4 Golden's the definitive edition of that game. So there you go.
That's true.
I'm wondering if Thurbleton knows which one lead out the topic.
But I said something here. In the.
I think he's left.
No, I didn't leave. Can you hear me? Hi.
What?
Should check in Discord.
Apparently he's petting his cat. Or was petting your cat.
We're good. So other things, fading out of that, fading into the nighttime where the nocturnal animals live, like owls, we'll move on to Square 65 joining White Owl Studios to produce a cat RPG.
It's a bit of a misnomer. He didn't really join the studio.
He created it.
Yeah.
He started it. I wasn't sure when I wrote this up.
Like, that is his studio.
Yeah.
Like a Kojima-esque situation where he left one studio and just started his own fucking thing. Is that deal? Or all I know is he's wearing a fake mustache on this website and holding an owl, so I'm pretty sure.
The pictures that he got, the photo shoot he did when he made the studio of him posing with that barn owl are fucking excellent. They are so, I'm so jealous. I would love to do that photo shoot. Dapper as fuck. Talking about this game, this, unless I'm mistaken, is based on the book he wrote, right?
I know he was in the process of writing a book that involved cats. I don't know if it actually is finished.
Yeah, so I remember reading a while ago that he wrote or was writing a book set in rural England about people who turn into cats. And that's the exact plot for this game. So I think it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm glad it's in video game form, because I probably never would have got around to reading a book by Swery, if I'm honest. But I'm actually pretty damn excited for this. I'm probably gonna end up backing it on Fig.
I hope I forget who it was, I forget which podcast speculated on the fact, but there was a distinct feeling that with D4, which was the game he made between this and Deadly Premonition, that Microsoft might have influenced how much he turned the crazy up to 12. To the point where I think that it actually pushed a lot of people to like this stuff away. Like, it was a bit too crazy. I hope this thing is kind of closer to a Deadly Premonition, where it's more of a honest kind of crazy, you know, like crazy because that's just how life is in some ways. If you subtract the red, you know, seed monster thing at the end of Deadly Premonition, but everything else is just kind of craziness of normal everyday life. And I love that. And I hope this is that, except with cats.
Yeah, because like Swery always has come off to me through some of his game stuff and also just through like following him on Twitter as like crazy, but 100% sincere and genuine. And I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. It's that genuine nature. Yeah, you're right. Like sincerity and being genuine is totally his bag. And that's what really makes people, that's what differentiates himself from just like a crazy person. He's a crazy person you can totally get behind and you just immediately like every time you see him talking about video games. He's really cool.
He's like the polar opposite of, or maybe the antithesis of Dave Lang. He drinks, but he drinks and everyone's happy instead of sad.
I feel like if I'm in Kyoto and I just tweet at him with hashtag drinking, there's like a 50-50 shot he's going to tweet back and like ask where I am and then just like meet up and have a drink.
Yeah. Indeed.
Also, that mustache is on point. If I could do a mustache like that, I would totally do that.
Are we all just looking at this website now?
I have not seen this mustache.
Also, I like that the website is just like, you know, the pictures of Mustache with Owl and all that. And then there's like the news thing that every website has. But then also just Swery's tweets of like, good morning, I am feeling America. Ah, drunk, I've seen these tired. So have to sleep. Good night. Swery's great.
Indeed. Trying hurricane, drinking.
As soon as I get to work every morning and I look at Twitter, he's there either with some kind of sake or beer, and I'm like, all right, somewhere, someone in the world is having a good time while I start my day.
My favorite was the other day. He was like, drinking because Monday. No other reason. It's Monday.
Yep. So I love that he's got his own studio and he's making a game. That's cool.
And we'll
I put him up there with Kojima in people I like rooting for.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. It is nice to see like the necessarily developers people can get behind coming out of Japan and striking it on their own is definitely a great thing. We will keep an eye on the White Owl's game Good Life.
Here's an interesting thought though. Can you think of an equivalent in the West? There's obviously two, even three if you count Igarashi, and maybe four if you count the others. There's quite a few like independent or who used to be like major game developer Japanese guys out there now making games that people get behind. Is that how much of that do you think is because they're Japanese and we respect them for these really niche Japanese games versus like their actual talent or anything similar?
Because
I can't think of anything similar for the West.
I feel that way about like Tim Schafer.
Like,
okay. Yeah,
Tim Schafer, to a degree, Warren Spector with design, Sid Meier. Like, there are some names that there. I'm just like, when I think about them, like, oh, no, they maybe not the same level of, like, unique, like, stuff that the Japanese, like, developers have done, but, like, they definitely know they know how to make good video games.
Well, I think the reason I went with Tim Schafer is because, like, every time Double Fine, or more specifically Tim Schafer, announces a new thing, it's going to be a bit off. It's going to be strange. I may not like it, but I'm going to be interested in at least taking a look at it and like hoping it does well.
Yeah. I mean, we also have the Tom Clancy's.
Tom so Clancy. To help us
with. Tom Clancy.
Yes.
Indeed. Tom Killancy.
Yeah.
So I've spent the past 5 minutes trying to think of a way to like transition us into Sega announces Fist of the North Star for 2018. But just look at this game, like I don't, there's a point where like a guy does like not necessarily a punch, but like his hand is completely outstretched and he tries like karate chopping just straight into the guy, and his hand just goes into the other. What is this game?
This game is fighting game.
This is a fighting game. I think. It's
a brawler.
So Yakuza 6 is the last Yakuza game starring Kiryu, and I believe this is their next project. To give you an idea of
this,
the pedigree.
This multiple punch thing, the shaking the martini with your blue flowing glowing art. Wow. Okay.
It's like, what if Dragon Ball Z and Mad Max had like a
yes.
combined?
Yeah.
Totally. It's based on a very old anime called Fist of the North Star. And this is the thing that's famous for a dude punching another dude a bunch of times and saying, you are already dead, and then turning around and walking while the other guy explodes behind him. Like, it happens at the end of this trailer. It's famous. And it's kind of hilarious that they're going back and making a video game out of it. I have no idea if it'll be good or not.
Do you think they could actually make a good Dragon Ball Z story RPG?
Oh,
like
Telltale like, Games really? Introduces the Dragon Ball story.
All I'm saying is I can't wait for like this thing to come out and the sales figures to be terrible, and there's just a bunch of you are already dead images everywhere on the internet.
I think this Squiddle's point though, having a good Dragon Ball Z RPG would require Dragon Ball Z having an actually good story, which it does not.
How dare you?
Like not even close.
Serious with that. Don't mind me.
But could you imagine trying to put all take the lore of Dragon Ball Z of what you can piecemeal together and try to make a game that's under 500 hours?
That's just a fighting game, Squiddle. That's just a fighting game where you play Goku.
Yeah, okay, I'm in. Keep going.
Budokai games may as well be that.
You're staring down Piccolo for 2 hours, and you actually have to keep playing the game. And if you stop, you have to start all over.
The finals at Evo take 3 episodes because you have to just charge up.
I left it off here, but that new Dragon Ball game, the new Dragon Ball fighting game, Dragon Ball Fighters, which I believe is the official title. People thought the title was going to be Dragon Ball Fighter Z, which makes more sense. But no, it's just Dragon Ball Fighters. That thing announced that they now added Super Saiyan Blue, which is apparently a thing from the new anime. I had no idea.
I've seen one episode of Dragon Ball Super. One singular episode.
So I've never seen a full episode of Dragon Ball Z, but I've watched the movie, and that's bad. So I know.
I think Dragon Ball, you have to be in the right mindset to watch a Dragon Ball game. It's like the same mindset as you would be when you're watching Vikings, except without the boobs. Like you're just there to see people fight other people, and that's pretty much what you're getting out of Dragon Ball. That said, though, like the original series is just kind of a crystal in time because, like, weird things with like Goku's naked for the first couple of episodes, like literally penis hanging out naked for the first couple of episodes of that. And there's strange things in that whole fucking series, but the problem with Super is that it's got Japanese VO.
So Dragon Ball V Game of Thrones crossover.
Yes.
If anybody could tackle the vast, expansive Dragon Ball universe, it's HBO. they can make it happen. I don't know how, but they can make it happen. But yeah, I believe that is going to be. Is there any news topics that we missed, you guys?
There is.
How have you guys not put the Half-Life thing on here?
Because I figured Cynic would get mad at me. It is crazy. No,
go ahead.
Because so, like one of the writers, sorry, mm-hmm. I mentioned it, so I'll
go for
one
it.
One of
yeah.
the writers, I don't remember his name. It escapes me. On his personal blog, he's no longer at Valve. On his personal blog, he put up with names changed to protect the innocent summary of what was going to be the episode 3/Half-Life 3 story. And I'm kind of into it. I think it sounds super cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So does that mean just by the fact that it was published, that will not happen that way?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Yes, but also it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Like, I have long since lost
That's
hope.
That's true.
This is some well, closure is better than no closure.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, Shin, you and I know someone that could possibly get people together to do a fan fiction thing based on it. So
yeah, I'm good friends with someone who worked on part of Black Mesa, but that was the multiplayer part. So
oh, okay,
I'm putting this in the same drawer as I put in that disc that came with this special edition of Metal Gear Solid 5, which was Kojima's like fucking storyboard art, last two chapters of that game just squeezed onto there. This is kind of in that, where it's like not canon, but may as well be canon, and it's probably all we're getting from those people ever.
Yeah, but it is still, I think, if you are like me and were interested in the Half-Life story, it is well worth reading. Mm-hmm. So I think it's actually pretty cool.
How long is it?
It's only a couple pages. Or... it's maybe 8 or 9 paragraphs. It is themed as a letter from Gordon Freeman.
That's kind of cool.
You can also find, if you go on the Giant Bomb forum,
Gertrude Freeman.
No, there is a version. It's just like a pastebin link where someone went through and just replaced the names to be the actual names. You should probably read
Nice.
To not protect the innocent. but yeah, the writer's name was Mark Laidlaw, if I'm pronouncing that right.
It's like 12 hours.
Last year, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, the subtle reference of the G-Man being compared to Gabe is pretty awesome.
That's pretty good. Cynic, you're asking
what was the impetus behind him posting this?
Apparently some NDA expired.
He also either that or he doesn't work there anyway, so screw them.
I mean, like Cynic, if you want to get into writing, you know, for your book and all that, good luck, mm-hmm. by the way, and someone like, you know, hired you, paid you for years to just sit in a room and not work on something that was this huge, like, story that the company you're working for is known for, but instead make comic books for TF2, and you had all these really cool ideas that you wanted to share with people, and people... like wanted to hear them, you kind of want to let people know. And like my heart kind of goes out to the writers, because I mean they've all just started leaving Valve because they're not making
another story game. Valve.
I've made a hard turn on Valve.
I never liked them because they've always been fucking over Australians when it comes to prices, and this just fits into all of that. Because
it's not on my list of things I played, but I was looking at Hellblade because I want to play that at some point. I was like, maybe I'll just buy the GOG version.
Yeah,
that's an idea.
Yeah. I buy most of my games when possible on GOG.
Am I the only one who can't, when you hear Hellblade, can't not think of Hellblade London? Like,
yeah,
I just wish that game was around.
Snow Sacrifice looks really good, but yeah, I do go to Hellblade London.
Yeah.
That failed MMO.
That was Hellgate London.
Oh, okay. Which one?
Well, okay. No, you know. I thought it was the same thing. It's Hell. Something.
Maybe now I've got my XCOM out of me, I can fucking buy Hellblade and maybe play that. But I don't know. Destiny's coming out soon.
You mean Divinity Original Sin 2 is coming out soon?
Oh god. Wait, when's Divinity coming out?
September 14th.
Oh fuck.
Alright, but
video games are back, y'all.
Video games are back, and we'll be talking about video games and what we've been playing right after this. And we're back after that very quick edited break. We are going to talk about what we've been playing, which has been a
quick,
lot of
quick,
stuff.
Quick update from the flood, guys. I am now on the top of my roof. Right. I've seen four cars go washing by me right now. Fortunately, nobody was in them. We have now marked a help us on the top of my house. So hopefully Superman will show up soon and rescue everyone. I'll check in with you once I'm safe.
Fucking terrible. Do you remember that fucking flood scene? God damn it. Oh, God. Now you just reminded me of fucking Batman versus Superman.
Hey, a lot of people really liked Wonder Woman as a movie and as, like, you know, a character design. So what did the DCEU, what did Warner Brothers do? They just greenlit three Joker films.
Okay, I'm going to get shit for this, but I liked Jared Leto's Joker. I liked his crazy psychoticness that he brought to that character.
Incorrect. I will say that I think Suicide Squad could have been done. It could have been a better movie if it wasn't impressed from above to be displayed a certain way. I'm sure director's cut would be a better film. But that's either here or now. We're going to talk about video games and what we've been playing. And Cynic's also going to talk about a couple of movies and TV shows.
As is my norm.
As is thing. But yeah, do we just want to? We'll go with Cynic first, since you're only going to get more tired through the course of this. But yeah, we'll try and keep it sub 2 hours, gentlemen.
All right. We'll see how this goes. So the first thing I have to say is don't buy Layton's Mystery Journey.
Scandalous.
I know. I was so excited for that fucking game. And last week was my first couple of tremors when I was like, oh God, the main character is kind of a bitch. And then no, it's kind of went south from there. She's, you know, the writing and stuff you come around on, or to some extent, I still don't like Cheryl. He's dumb and I don't really like the main character either. Whatever. The main thing is that the puzzles piss me off. The logic puzzles are really annoying and they're poorly written. So for example, like there's an easy one right near the start of the game, which is like shows you this clock and it's daytime behind it, and it has a time on there, and it says what's the fewest amount of times you need to touch this clock to change the time to 11 p.m. And now it's got a little twister thing on it, you know, it's an analog clock, so you can twist the thing to change the time, blah, blah, blah. And there's a couple of ways you can think about it. Like, okay, most ways would lead you to one. One way to change the time, because you either touch the hands yourself and just spin them around. That's a one continuous touch. Or you spin the thing on top of the actual wind-up on the top of the clock, and you only have to touch that once as well. The answer is zero. Because you can just wait for the time to get to 11 p.m.
That's kind of clever.
It is kind of clever, except the phrasing makes it sound like you have to affect the change. By definition, therefore, you'd think that you need to do it yourself rather than just waiting. So like the logic is kind of, there's like a lot of puzzles where they want a clever solution, but there are perfectly valid logical solutions as well that you would think of before the clever solution, which I guess is what they intend, because they want their solution to be cute and clever. But there's abstract, there's things that fall to the cracks. Like another one where I was just listening to the Easy Allies podcast and they ran into the same thing I did. So this is one of their examples. There's a question which was like, do people ride motorbikes have to adhere to the same rules on the road as those who drive cars? Yes or no? Now, the answer they wanted was yes. However, the real answer is no, because the bike drivers actually have more rules to adhere by, such as lane splitting and a bunch of other things that they can do that cars can't. So, no, they don't adhere to the same rules, but they wanted you to say yes. Like, there's things like that. The logic puzzles just come up every now and then, just fucking slowly start to wear away at me. I just like gave up on that game.
I'd say yes, if only just because, like, is like
the subset of the other.
All cars are squares, but not like, but all bicycles are rectangles, and so we have to behave like squares sometimes. You have to follow the same rules as a person who rides their bike like three times a week. I am a vehicle, so if there's a person like walking in a zebra lane like across the street, I require to stop because I'm a car, effectively. Mm-hmm. But then also I can do fun stuff like off-road it and all that.
I think we're overlooking the biggest flaw in this game is that this dog has a single bottom tooth.
He's the worst.
Makes no sense in any.
They call him Charles, which is God. There's so many moments in this game that just piss me off. Like, Catriel names the dog at the start of the game, and she's looking at this like this Sherlock Holmes book, and she goes, "Okay, I'll call you Sherl," which is probably the worst name, like, conjugation you could come up with from Sherlock Holmes. Like, you could call him Holmes, would be sick. You could call him Sherlock, which would be great. You could call him many things. Watson, whatever, not Cheryl. Cheryl's a shit name. The game just wore on me to the point where everything about it started annoying me. So I just fucking ditched it.
Okay.
Sorry.
Sure.
Yeah, that's my long story short on that one. Everything from there, though, I actually liked. So Yakuza 0 I played this week. I ended up watching the entirety of that through Giant Bomb, so I don't feel that propulsive force to finish it myself. But sometimes I go back to it and just play it for a while, and that's a fucking awesome game. That like easily sells me on the whole series if it wasn't for the fact that it's probably the best of the series and the most focused of the series in a lot of ways.
But we don't know how the remake is going to be. They might take that knowledge and move it forward.
Well, the reviews for Kiwami aren't great, which is what concerns me. It's not out yet, but I might end up picking it up, but I don't know. Especially since, as you said, like Divinity's coming out soon and Destiny's coming out soon, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, Destiny.
But no, it's great. It's fucking good game, Yakuza 0. Definitely recommend it to anyone at home if you haven't already watched the Endurance Run. Or not the Endurance Run, the feature on Giant Bomb.
the Endurance Run in all except for name.
Exactly. but that's great. Then, speaking of features of Giant Bomb, they have a new one on the GB East crew are doing called Exquisite Corpse, I think. No, they call it Exquisite Core. I thought the... Yeah, in the way they spell it, but I thought the concept it came from was corpse.
I mean, maybe, considering how it's been going.
The thing that they're doing a pun on is called Exquisite Corpse, but
yeah,
the joke is right. People mispronounce core corpse.
Yeah, exactly. So the feature is they're playing XCOM Enemy Within, the expansion, with exchanging commanders, so every other session there's a new commander of the three people other than Vinny in Giant Bomb East. And they're doing fucking terribly. And we were talking about this before the short podcast, but there's something about watching someone else play a game you like really badly that makes you want to just go back and play it yourself again. I don't know what it is. It's just intrinsic. Persona 4.
I've also been playing XCOM Enemy Unknown. For the same reason.
Exactly. You watch the play and you're like, no, you don't fucking, and then you just say, oh fine, I'll just do it myself.
So yeah, I've been doing the worst thing of playing with the Long War mod again. But yeah, ignoring that.
Oh wow.
On the Exquisite Chord thing, it's compared to like the Kerbal Space Program one that they did of like, you know, four people playing a single game, all influencing.
Mm.
I don't know how well this is going to play out. It might be great in like the long run, but I don't know how long they're having this series run because you need to have.
Like, I don't think they'll last long.
Yeah, it's you need to have like three arcs of like people learning how to play the game. It's, I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, when the game steps it up and requires you to have taken lessons learned from the early part, those lessons would have been like divided in three because each person would have only gotten a subsection of every lesson you need to learn to actually succeed in that game. So, for example, one person will encounter like a new enemy, like those invisible ones, relatively soon, and the next person won't even know they exist unless they are told about it in those letters they send themselves between episodes. Like, it's a fascinating concept. I don't know if XCOM's the right game. Considering how punishing it fucking is.
It's the perfect game.
I guess so. Assuming they win through it, like that would be the best thing. Like, if it's a punishing game, they suck at it, and like every other game they play, they somehow just get their way through it, and that's part of the wonder of watching them play a video game. But then I'm decent in XCOM. I'm not like, I assume Thurbleton's like far more practiced than I am, but I'm pretty decent at it. And even I'm just like kind of just keeping those plates spinning a couple months into my playthrough right now. Like I have quite a few people on orange waiting for a satellite, and I'm rushing to getting satellites out. And that's with having pre-planned the synergies of having satellites, like satellite uplinks next to each other and all that kind of stuff. They're just building their first satellite uplink now, right? It's like, it's terrifying watching them go through because it's just going to, it's going to fall apart really soon.
They're going to lose a lot of countries. And that's kind of why it's so, to end on XCOM, but the reason why I'm playing the Long War mod and not the original is because one of the two big criticisms I had with the original was, if you're this international organization, why can't you respond to all the alien like things and have to choose one? XCOM lets you do that. It's only a single alien abduction happening. But then also, if you lose a country, it's very hard to do. But you can take that country back from the aliens in the mod.
Oh, cool.
It's, you have to do like a base landing, and it's a whole mess. But losing those, it's... I've never actually seen a playthrough where all the countries disavow XCOM and they have no funding. But like, we'll see how this goes.
Oh man, they lost most of their squad in
they
Dan's
can hire more
episodes.
Rookies. Yeah, it's fine.
I guess. I'm sitting here with the same point in time I had sergeants, right? Like I had multiple sergeants in my team, and it's just like, oh man, you're just watching them fall apart. Anyway, that's XCOM.
I'm very excited for when like they bring the mechs in and all the like Abby gets brought back as Robo Abby, Mecha Abby.
Wait, can you revive corpses?
No, but like you can just say robot.
Yeah, just head lord.
Ellen DeGeneres as a giant robot.
Oh, she's fantastic. Like Abby's really great at coming up with stupid names for stupid characters to make. Yeah, she does improv. That's true. To be fair, like I don't know if like just picking Ellen DeGeneres has got a lot to do with being good at improv, but that was still an inspired choice.
Saying, it is just using as an example where she seems to be good, like on the Beastcast, and they do a bunch of their bits. She always seems to chime in at just the right time with just the right joke.
Yeah, she's good. I like Abby, which is more than I can say for Ben. Anyway, moving on. We've got a couple of things I've been doing. I'm just going to touch on one of them. Last week I talked about my foray into writing, and I'm keeping up. It's like trying to fucking keep your head above water with the tide coming in. Like getting out 2,500 words a week doesn't sound like much, but it is tough. It is tough when you're actually trying to make them good and have an actual contiguous story that you're working on over time. So I'm at 10,000 words now from my little novel, and
damn,
I don't want to talk about it. I have not done something this hard in a long time, especially mentally. Anyway, that's my writing thing update. Maybe I'll essentially just chime in and tell everyone if everything goes to shit. But so far it's going well. 10,000 words in, 3 chapters in, we'll keep going.
If you want me to write your forward for you, I'd be more than happy to.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
It'll involve Vikings and standing on top of mountains, drinking a substance of alcohol. And chanting to the winds.
Really?
Yeah.
Finally, the last two things that we're doing. Speaking of like keeping your head above water, Dunkirk. I think have we talked about this on the show before? Like Thurbleton, you might have brought it up.
I think I've expressed like interest in planning to see it, of which since talking about it, I have seen it, but I don't know if anybody's talked about it yet. The main thing was Baby Driver was the last movie we talked about, I think. With
me. Right.
Well, good news is I have not seen Baby Driver, but I have seen Dunkirk.
What do you guys thought on Dunkirk?
That was good.
I thought it was. I got two parts to this. Part one, probably Nolan's best film. Part two, because there's almost no dialogue.
Oh wow! Yeah.
So wow. Yeah. So my stepdad wanted to go see that movie, see Dunkirk. His friend, who was also a military guy from the Vietnam era, said, "Don't go see it. It's a horrible movie. It's loud. You won't like it." Because, and I'm assuming based on what Shin said, there's no dialogue. It's just bullets.
No, there's very little. The film does a decent job, all things considered, of making you care about the characters without them having just exposition just thrown at you.
Okay.
I will say there's a lot of sound happening throughout the movie, but I don't think it's loud bullets as much like the Hans Zimmer soundtrack does an excellent job of accenting the whole thing of every second that passes, the Germans are getting closer to like taking over Dunkirk.
There was an interesting video I watched about Hans Zimmer's soundtrack in regards to Dunkirk, but it's something he does in a lot of his films. Or I forgot what it's called. It's basically you have a series of notes that are increasing in pitch, and you just sort of cycle them repeatedly, so it's not actually getting any higher, but it sounds like it is, so it increases the tension. Yeah. Forgot what it's called, but neat little video.
The soundtrack of the movie is breathtaking. So as a person in the military myself, especially in the person in the weapons part of the military, I had the problem with it that a lot of people had with Interstellar and Gravity, where for those movies, because I know space sciences, but I'm not a astrophysicist myself. I didn't have any real problems with them in terms of like suspending disbelief. But for Dunkirk, I just had some real issues, man. I just couldn't get around. Like I was like, ships don't sink that slow. Like you have these like little gut reactions when I'm watching that movie. You can't glide that long, like you know, like just stupid little things that are there for dramatic effect and for good reason. Like you don't want to sit there for 5 minutes watching a ship slowly go underwater. Like more like 15 to 20 minutes, like slowly go underwater. Right? You don't need that, and that doesn't make it dramatically interesting. Or like, what happened to the U-boats? Like, where are the there's things they did by necessity for that movie to keep it going pacing wise. That just don't make sense. And I guess for the layman in general, it would be perfectly fine. Like a lot of this stuff seems believable. With like a torpedo skimming the surface of the water, even though that was like a major invention when Japan did it for pretty much the first time at Pearl Harbor. Like there's weird little things like that where it's like, okay, for the audience, unless you see that like ripple in the water, they wouldn't twig to the fact that it's a torpedo. Like there's little things like that which are perfectly valid and perfectly okay for filmmaking. But as a person who actually works in the weapons industry, I just couldn't get behind it. But that said, like there were barriers between me and loving Dunkirk, but no way could I say it's a bad movie. Like that was an excellent movie from start to finish. The characters were really interesting. I love the Frenchman. Of all people, he was actually my favorite arc in that movie. The dad was cool.
Speaking of audio, I was lucky enough to see it in like a proper IMAX, like a proper 70mm.
Nice. Like
it was insane. It cost like $25 for a ticket, but it was totally worth it.
Oh man. Yeah. I love Nolan movies. I would say like he's probably my favorite filmmaker right now. I can't think of many people. up in that
recent garbage films aside, I still really like Ridley Scott.
Oh God, that means you're a diehard in my eyes. Because you said
away. Filmmaker alive cynic, which technically that is accurate. He is making things still, and he's alive.
For every bad alien film, there's also like The Martian, which is really good.
Sure. Yeah. The Martian has like, I did the stupid thing with the Harry, like all the people had with the Harry Potter books where I was like, the book's better. I had that problem with The Martian.
I mean, the book is better. Well. The book is better. Yeah. It doesn't mean that the film is not also good.
No. Yeah. The film's pretty good. The film's pretty good. I like the, is his name Childish Gambino? Is that his fucking name? I forget his name.
Gambino.
I don't remember. Maybe that's his.
I believe it's Childish Gambino. Gambino. Yes.
Is that his artist name or is that his?
His actual name is
Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Donald Glover was fantastic in The Martian, and obviously, like, I loved.
But I mean, if you want to talk like good Ridley Scott movies, like Alien was really good. You got Sigourney Weaver, and like, you know, Sigourney Weaver's still doing work nowadays, right? Cynic, what's Sigourney Weaver doing nowadays?
Oh wow, good job, Thurl.
Let's keep this train rolling.
Yeah, the last thing I watched was The Defenders. Has anyone else seen it yet?
No. Nope.
Okay. Does anyone else here watch any of the Netflix Marvel stuff?
I don't watch any of the Marvel stuff, period.
Okay. All right.
I've seen some of the Netflix Marvel stuff, but, like, yeah, I've not caught up on... I've not binged...
I only want Jessica Jones. All the other ones can suck a dick, in my opinion.
Oh, God.
So we're going back to The Martian and saying Jessica Chastain. Like, yeah.
What new developments do we have since we last talked about this?
Jessica Jones, but she was all right in this. Sorry?
What new developments do we have since, like, I think the last we talked about it was the trailers during
It's out now.
Comic-Con? So I mean, like, so we talked about it at Comic-Con. What's new?
Mm-hmm. It's... Now I can actually, like, give you an opinion on it. Before we were really hopeful, I can say it doesn't really live up to the hype, but it's a good, like, 7 out of 10 watch. Like, I'd give it a watch if you have time. It's not as good as that sweet Castlevania anime. Like, if you had to choose one of the two, I'd watch Castlevania, but Defenders is all right. It made everyone believable in how they interacted with each other, which is a difficult thing to do. What's his face? Danny Rand, i.e. Iron Fist, is still a retard. So that's still a thing, and that doesn't get solved. But Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Daredevil are pretty cool. And that's definitely worth watching. That's it. That's it for me this Fortnite. That's everything I've been doing. Yeah.
Do you think it's something that, like, if people like have a Netflix subscription, they should probably sit down and watch it before it goes away and becomes part of like the Disney Netflix that they've announced? Do you think like the stuff that Netflix produced is going to be like?
Can we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
The Disney thing is like, people are talking about, oh, Disney's going to launch their own service and take their stuff off of Netflix. That's like the least important part of that announcement. Like, the thing that people are glossing over is that they bought or upped their stake in BAMTech to 75%, which, like, for anyone here who is unfamiliar, BAMTech was the tech branch of Major League Baseball, co-owned by all 30 teams, and they spun it off into its own company 4 or 5 years ago. But they handle the back-end streaming for Major League Baseball, the NHL, HBO, the WWE, CBS. Like, they do everything in terms of like TV streaming.
Man. Wow. So wait, so the... Do you think they think it's going to be like a force to be reckoned with, the Disney Channel? Well, the channel, but, you know, the Disney service?
Well, you got to think, because now instead of all of those companies, like, Disney now has one over on HBO because they now own the company that, like, streams HBO Now. Like, that's just a lot of revenue coming in for Disney, and it's a good way for Disney as just a corporation to diversify and get their hand in the tech game, in addition to the entertainment game.
Yeah. Man.
Disney, like, it's a super, super smart purchase, but no one's talking about it because everyone's like, oh, Netflix. No.
Well, yeah, because that's what affects the common man. The common man wants to see his damn superheroes on his damn Netflix. But the sports half of the equation was always a big question mark, and that was part of the original announcement. And everyone was wondering if it would actually be a big deal, but it sounds like it could be. I don't know. We talked about it last week, but I don't know. Like,
they also run PlayStation View and stuff for Riot.
That's interesting. BAM Tech.
Yep. There you go. It used to stand for the BAM is Baseball Advanced Media, but just basically a tech company.
But I think we're prepping.
Yeah, it does. So that's transition. We'll move on to thank you, Cynic, for what you've been playing. We're gonna throw to, well, Squiddle. What do you?
Yeah.
First, let's give us a Hurricane Harvey update.
Let's see. I am now safe in the Alamo Dome.
Excellent.
We have beer and hot dogs, but only with mayonnaise. So you have to dip the whole thing in a vat of mayonnaise.
Is it, what type of beer? Like, is it ranch flavored beer?
Not ranch flavored beer. That's actually being sold outside of the stadium. Inside, we are getting Bud Light, unfortunately.
Oh,
so
sorry.
Not much better.
I like the idea of the people trying to sell ranch flavored beer being exiled out into the storm.
But what have you been playing lately?
Absolutely nothing.
All right.
Nice.
Quickest segment ever.
Great.
Nice.
Throwing it off then to Shinboy.
Me? I've been playing all kinds of things. Do you want the recently or do you want the since the start of the year?
Do like a quick end cap, I guess. There's one here that I've just bolded and italicized. I will back up on that if you want to wait until, like, put that at the end.
Okay, I will wait until your segment, and then I'll just say that what you are currently playing, I have finished it, like, a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, other things that I have finished here, Horizon Zero Dawn, that game's
what
real good.
What do you
good.
Think of Horizon?
I think it's good. I love Horizon. Oh, it's so good.
It's very good.
I'm shocked at how many people like don't think that game is great. Like, I thought that game was fucking spectacular.
Holy shit. I'm way into way into the fiction they built.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my god!
Like all the little details. I could this is a minor spoiler. But like eventually near the end, that game throws real dark. Right? This is not a main plot spoiler. Yeah. This is a note you find on the ground spoiler. But like some of those notes, the one in reception, they're talking about how they want the room next door where people are being told what's happening to have more insulation. Yep. In the waiting room can't hear all the people in the like initiation room just breaking down in tears is super fucking fucked hell, up man. And I'm like way into it.
Dude, that game's incredible. Like, I want to know who the writing team was.
Just out in the world through its dynamic weather and lighting creates an atmosphere that I was not expecting. Like the sound design's really good. Like the fog and rain and even like sun and clouds are really good.
Man, I'm
plays really well.
I think me and Brad like waxed philosophic about it like a couple months ago, just before.
Well, I wasn't on the podcast where you discussed Horizon shortly after.
Oh,
you
the spoiler cast, right?
Yeah. I wasn't on that, but I listened to the whole thing and then spoke to you shortly afterwards, and I was like, I agreed with basically everything you said. I absolutely adored that game. The story, in particular. It's probably one of, if not my favorite video game stories. It's the first time I've ever really gone out my way to find like every goddamn audio log and sit there and listen to those things.
But on top of that, I also do think it actually plays really well. I went with my standard. I played it like the new Tomb Raiders where it's all stealth and just a bow. It was super fun.
Okay.
Lot of whistling, just calling the dinosaurs over.
Don't need to whistle. Just headshot them with the bow.
Straight. Did you use the sniper bow? Because I think it was sick.
Of course I did. I think pretty much exactly how I did.
So less stealth and more just you can't see me while I'm being super aggressive.
I'm basically John Cena. You can't see
the shit out of everyone.
Nice. Great.
Sadly, like looking at your list here, Shin, like you didn't get to see the juxtaposition between the two since you just got your Switch. But what do you think of Zelda?
I've only played maybe 6 or 7 hours because I'm sort of playing it like when I have a minute. Because I'm still playing like other things.
And, like, that's the way
I know that game is long. I actually like it way more than I thought I would.
I came around in the end. I know Brad didn't, but
I haven't gone back to it. Like I tried playing it in bit by bit, like 20 minutes at a time, and just, I couldn't ever get it to grab me.
I think the reason I am enjoying it is because I'm only playing it 20 minutes or so, half hour or so at a time. It's like I can find one shrine, do one shrine, and be like, that's good for now, and then just do that every so often.
I actually felt, for me, it was the opposite. Like I don't know if you guys heard the episode, but I ended up saving up all the story stuff to do at the end, and then I kind of just chipped away at the shrine, still had like, you know, the normal 60 or something done, and then I went in one stretch in over 2 days, like 4 to 6 hours or maybe even 8 hours on the second day, and just beat out all the story and then beat the game in one stretch. And that actually kind of made the game contiguous through my own force of will rather than like, because you know, it's a unstructured storytelling method that they use. But if you do it in that way, you get a structured story out of it, and actually kind of solved my
issue. This is a simple, dumb thing, but I think one thing that is helping me enjoy the story stuff more is I'm totally playing that game in Japanese.
Oh, wow.
The Japanese VO, at least.
Oh, shit. When they released the Japanese VO?
A couple months ago. Launch, right? No, because I was looking at emulating it because people pretty quickly figured out how to do like a Final Fantasy XII-esque language swap on like
nice. VO.
So I was like, man, maybe I'll just emulate it. And then I guess Nintendo saw that and went, we hate emulators and fun, so let's just release it officially.
Oh, man. It's...
That's good. Yeah, dude, I like it when they do that. That's good.
Absolutely. I wish I had done it in Japanese because that English VO is questionable.
That's the thing. One thing I heard, and I was like, for some reason, because I don't speak Japanese, having it be in Japanese sort of helps enforce like the stranger in a strange land feeling that a lot of that game goes for.
I can see that. Absolutely. Man.
Oh, yeah, just to clarify, Shinboy, like the text and all that was still English, right? It was just the VO.
It is just Japanese VO.
Okay. So I was thinking about doing something similar with German, if and when I pick it up. I very much want to, but people are still buying Switches here, so it's hard to find one lazily.
Mm.
But then that's still a big commitment for a game.
I only have two games. I have Zelda and Mario Kart.
Yeah,
so
Mario Kart's real good.
Yep. That's, yeah, I'm one of the suckers that the bought a Wii U.
I've got.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had already played a ton of Mario Kart.
You already knew.
But yeah, I knew. I'm like, you guys, this Mario Kart's awesome. Listen to me.
Sick.
And then other stuff I have actually played to completion. I played through beginning of the year, that new Kingdom Hearts thing. It's only like a few hours. That plays really well.
What did you think of the latest Kingdom Hearts 3 trailers?
I mean, that game looks good.
Yeah.
I actually don't know how I feel about the style. The sort of blockier style that was needed because they were PS2 games, I think kind of fits a bit more.
For me, it was more the camera. Like some of the battle sequences, that camera is actively terrible. I mean,
every single camera in every third-person action game ever is terrible, so whatever.
I'd say Bayonetta and stuff. Like, the Platinum games are not that terrible. There is one moment in Nier
where I was cursing the camera.
Oh, Nier is kind of different, though. On PC, it's weird with all the camera controls you have in terms of setting your distances and height above ground and a bunch of other things you can do with that. But, with like DMC Devil May Cry or Vanquish and stuff, I never had a really that.
It's one of those things where I like From Software games, so obviously I don't let a bad camera bother me.
God, yeah, that's fair.
Lock on Bloodborne was fucking terrible. God,
if you want to look at something off in the distance, your Temple Beast person is covering up everything. Yeah, okay.
I played the new Kingdom Hearts thing on the hardest difficulty and didn't die the whole time, so I feel like I'm already at Kingdom Hearts. At the hardest difficulty available when you first start it, because once you beat it, it unlocks a higher one. I have not gone back. Yeah. But that's good. It keeps one of my favorite things from Birth by Sleep, which is like you have a meter that builds up as you use abilities. And when it fills up, you either use a finisher, or if you used enough abilities of a certain type, you go into like a stance switch, which is kind of a fun system. And you can like combo the stances, and it's kind of cool. Hmm. Anyway, that's fun. I also played through all of Final Fantasy XII again, the Zodiac Age on
Hell
the PS4.
Oh, yeah.
And I have talked about this before because I played through Final Fantasy XII a few years ago when I emulated the Zodiac job system version because that never came out in English. And it's basically that, but they add a second job. Like each character can have a second job.
That's awesome.
Which is cool because the way I like to play through that is the character Ash is the real main character of that game. Don't let fucking Vaughn fool you. Has the highest inherent magic stat. Yeah, she was the princess.
Yeah, yeah.
It has the highest inherent magic stat and a pretty high strength. So just as an example, it makes sense to put her as a samurai because their damage scales with both magic and strength. Well, in this, you can pick her as a samurai and then also a black mage.
Nice.
She can just lay waste. Cool. And you get cool stuff where like, oh, your white mage can now wear heavy armor if you pick the right class to go with them, because you get full access to like both boards. It's cool.
That was a weird game. Now you mentioned it, I think my main was Bosch, the knight guy.
That game's odd because it is a Final Fantasy game in name only.
Yeah. Nothing else.
The reason I love it so much is because it's an Ivalice game first and a Final Fantasy game second. So like the director, I forgot his name, the Ivalice guy, can never remember his name. He also did Tactics.
Yeah, I don't remember. Tactics.
He basically, like, him and his team were like, with a Final Fantasy game, as long as you hit the basics, like you have chocobos, you have moogles, as long as you hit that,
cost Kiraga.
You can kind of do whatever else you want within that. So they took that to heart and just ran with it. That story is not, it's not one of the better Final Fantasy like main narratives. It's kind of just Star Wars, but all the characters are really great. It's kind of the opposite of 10, where you have a pretty interesting story held back by some lackluster characters and a bad script, where this is like a mediocre story held up by great characters and an amazing script.
Well, amazing script is one of those weird things that I can't necessarily point to it for the entirety of the game. Like, the last boss is fucking terrible. Like, I hate
it.
I mean,
strictly, like, the dialogue and the writing and, like, the delivery and just the localization is another general term. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Obviously, except for Van, because I don't think he's good at all, but everyone else, like, I loved Ash, I love Balthier, obviously. He's the guy you're supposed to like. He's the Han Solo-esque figure of that game. But, you know, like, Bosch is more of, like, a stoic guy that is not necessarily immediately likable. Like, they pulled him off really well. Like, there's a lot about 12 that people don't remember.
Even going through this time, I actually liked Vaughn a bit more because he, going through it again, you realize, oh, he's just a kid who's in way over his head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pinello's and also
Ran. The only issue there is, like, the oh god, Vanille. Oh, so what's the name again? Is that
Pinello?
Pinello, fuck it.
She is like the also ran of that game. She's a nothing character, but that's okay.
Wait, are you one of those people who never used Riku as well? Because I never used Riku.
I use Riku because Mix is broken.
Mix is broken. But even then, I just fucking Yeah, she's the equivalent of Selfie from Final Fantasy VIII, or fucking who's the equivalent of Final Fantasy VII? Fuck it. There's always one character that everyone's like, fuck that. Man, anyway. She's that character that everyone's like, oh, fuck that. I'm not going to bother using her.
Yeah, after going through Kimari this time, and realizing just how well everything, like, there are certain scenes, like, this is a relatively major plot point, so I'm not going to say anything about it, but there's a scene where, like, pretty much all of the judges, the Arcadian judges, are arguing with each other, and, like, some of the fantasy ass dialogue that gets used is so good, talking about like calling people serpents and seeing the serpent coiled before me and wearing a mummer's mask and like all this shit. It's so good.
The Iblis team is pretty like, I don't think any Final Fantasy game has been written as well as fucking Final Fantasy Tactics. Like, that's probably the best written Final Fantasy game.
And speaking of Iblis, how about this for a segue? I am looking forward to the upcoming 24-man raid in Final Fantasy 14 because it is called Return to Iblis, and they're bringing in that team as advisors for writing.
That's pretty cool. Like, that's
pretty cool.
That's neat that, like, that's a thing that can happen because 14 is basically it's another Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, who wants to hear about Buck Wild theory about that raid and Final Fantasy 14?
Lay down that theory for me.
The main bad guys in 14 are Asians. They're like a race of evil magic people. I don't know. But it is said that they are not from, they're from another sun, right? And there are 12 of them. And in the lore of Iblis, there were two groups of like 12. I forgot what they're called, but like the Espers, the summons in 12 are like the light. And no one knows what happened to the dark because they got banished to another world. And in 14, one of the main bad guy Asians, like when he casts a spell, the glyph that shows up on the ground is like the reverse of the glyph of one of the summons from 12.
That's so
my Buck Wild theory is that the bad guys in 14 are just the banished gods from 12. It all ties together.
That is actually probably a pretty good theory. That sounds actually...
And then we're going to learn totally of that in the Iblis raid.
Nice. Is that, do you think that would be setting up for an expansion or something?
No, because Stormblood just came out like a couple months ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, is great. I've been playing a lot of that.
I think Durin has as well. Like, I swear someone else, aside from you, who has also been playing a shitload of Final Fantasy 14. Because it's apparently, like, probably... It's, what, the second biggest MMO out there or something? Like, by revenue, I mean. Like, it's pretty huge.
Yeah, and they keep saying their player count has gone up, which, as it should, at an expansion.
That's awesome.
They're good.
It's great that... I'm always happy to see, like, it... It does not interest me anytime I watch friends, like a couple of friends stream up on like Twitch with like three viewers, like, oh, hey, here's us doing this raid fight, and I'll watch them. It does not look compelling to me, but I'm happy that you are having a good time, and also that story part of it sounds actually really cool.
Say, like, it is maybe one of the better Final Fantasy stories to come out recently, especially the first expansion, Heavensward, is very good. It is just a good Final Fantasy story. Like, just a good story in general.
And is it, so for anybody who might be interested in something like this, just correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was originally subscription, but have they gone free to play?
No, it is still subscription. It's 15. If you only have one character, it's $12.99, and the way that game works is you can switch classes on the same character, so there's no reason to have more than one character. Like, literally, your class is determined by what weapon you're wielding, so all you gotta do to switch classes is just switch weapons.
That's pretty good.
Pretty cool.
So, you can save a bit of money that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's a pretty good free trial. It's, like, unlimited up to level 35, I think.
Oh, okay. That must be what I'm thinking of.
What's the max level in the game?
Currently 70. Just got up to 70.
Okay, so you can get about halfway there.
Right. Yeah. It's really good.
Very cool.
Everything I hear about that game is it's like a phoenix from the ashes. Did you get a chance to watch that Danny O'Dwyer?
I did. I thought the first episode was very good, and the second and third could have been smushed into one and trimmed up a bit because they covered similar topics, but I still enjoyed it.
Mm.
Yeah. Well worth watching, especially if you're someone who's unfamiliar with that game, and especially if you're someone who's unfamiliar with, like, Final Fantasy as a whole. I know, Cynic, that's not you. but Danny is relatively uninitiated into Final Fantasy. So he came at it with that approach. So I've been interested to try and show it to people, like, I don't know, like my parents or something, like, who don't know anything about games. Like, look at this crazy story where they made a bad thing and then made it good.
It is. They did a fucking amazing job. And there you go. Like, I think we're going to add that to the plugs at the end of the show. But holy man, Noclip has been doing some pretty good work, I have to say, over the last couple of months.
Yes.
Man.
Yes. Yes, they have.
The guy's a machine.
And then a couple other quick things. I've played a bit of Starcrawlers, which I don't know if any of you have even heard of Starcrawlers.
So, not before you typed it out, but yeah.
Okay.
It's a cool Kickstarter RPG.
It is an RPG on Steam. I don't know if it's in early access or not. I don't remember. Probably. Everything's in early access.
They came in from Greenlight, but I don't know if it's early access.
Anyway, it's grid-based first person, similar to like Grimrock. But it's turn-based, like properly turn-based, and also sci-fi. So, like, instead of having a weird quasi-real-time combat like in Legend of Grimrock, when, like, you and an enemy, like, face each other, reach each other, it pulls to, like, a separate area, and, like, Final Fantasy X style, the turn order shows up on the screen. Awesome. And, like, as you pick what you want to do, the turn order, like, dynamically shifts to show how it's going to affect
it. Oh, fuck. Yes, more games should do that, man.
At the very least, like, each action has, like, time points. So, like, if you do quicker actions, you can go again quicker, stuff like that.
That's awesome.
It's pretty good.
Man, I recommend
it. Also, 1.0, at least. Like, it's not showing early access, but it is. It's $20.
That's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
It's got a look to it. There's a lot of exploration and, you know, like any good RPG, like crawler RPG, where... You know, you can work your way through these levels. Oh, you found this panel. Let's see if your hacker in your party can disable the security cameras and stuff like that. It's pretty fun. Gets pretty rough, too, as any RPG like that should.
Wow, it reminds me of a lot of Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey and 4, in terms of like how the combat looks and a bunch of other stuff. It's actually surprisingly Shin Megami Tensei inspired.
Yeah, it's cool. I recommend checking it out.
Yeah, Star Crawlers. Is there,
correct.
Are you or in fact the Star Crawler, or is just everybody?
I do not know if you are the Star Crawler, but you certainly crawl through dungeons that happen to be in the stars.
Just reading the description, I'm getting a little bit of cyberpunk vibes from this. Megacorps.
Yeah.
There's
like a pretty in-depth faction system where it's like, hey, if you take this mission, the company that's asking you to take it will like you, but the corporation that is like their main business rival will not like you, and stuff like that. It goes pretty deep. It's cool.
Nice.
I started a bit of Pyre, only like the first couple hours.
Pyre?
Super gentle.
Okay, I was really curious about this.
I really like the world. I really like the characters. I really like the way it looks. I really like the music. I really like the Oregon Trail style elements. I hate the fantasy basketball.
Thank you. Fucking thank you. I had that feeling the moment I saw the gameplay concept back when they first pitched the game. And I was like, why are you making fantasy basketball?
I don't know why, but... Every single like fake sport in a video game, for some reason, every developer thinks it's a good idea to make it control like really swimmy.
Hey man, I like Blitzball.
Like Blitzball is bad. I think Rocket League controls like ass.
Whoa, I think many people would disagree with that at least.
All those people are wrong.
Blitzball is divisive, but Rocket League is great. I don't know. I'm looking at
saying Brad, Rocket League is swimmy is the most fucking insane thing I've ever heard in my entire life. The game is the fucking tightest game you will ever play.
I was hoping you were going to say something, Bob. If only because, like,
all I'm going to say here is get good.
No, because I like new sports really games. I play a ton of FIFA. I'm like never.
Yeah, but saying FIFA is the bastion of good gameplay is the most insane thing I've ever heard in my life.
No, yeah, no, you are correct there. But at least if I point a stick in a direction, I know I'm going to go in that direction.
Well, it depends if the animation lets you actually.
But that's only when you're controlling the ball and you run into another player and your dude does a crazy.
Let's not talk about FIFA anymore, guys.
We're talking about.
I've already done complaining about fake basketball. That'd be more fake soccer. Fucking hell.
FIFA's real soccer.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the realist.
But are you going to stick with Pyre? Or are the pros? Well,
yeah, no, because the rest of it's really good. I really like sort of the visual novel style elements. It's just that the fantasy basketball, not so much.
That's the part that kind of gets me, because I'm usually a sucker for a visual novel, man. Like it is really just that when I saw that gameplay loop that made me just so disinterested from the start. And the reviews haven't been that stellar, but are the characters good? Like I know, like the central plot is interesting and the world they build is interesting, but are the characters good?
I like the character so far. Again, I'm only like a couple hours in, but I like my little squad that I'm rolling with.
Nice. Yeah.
Shin Boy.
Yeah, I'm on the edge of that one.
I need to know, how's the soundtrack? It's a Supergiant game. How's the soundtrack?
The Darren Korb soundtrack is fully intact and good.
Excellent. Okay.
Nice.
That's all I needed to know.
It's basically it mirrors my thoughts on something like the Banner Saga, where I like everything outside of the quote unquote combat. I mean, I dislike the combat in the Banner Saga for a different reason.
But
the other elements that make it a game, I get that.
The other thing I didn't. Is Pyre voice acted at all?
It's like fake voice acted. There's like a fake language where they say a few words at the start of a line.
Oh, right. Got it. Yeah.
It's fine because the dialogue flows pretty well, and there's not like here's like 9 paragraphs of text to read. It moves with a pretty decent clip.
It's because it's mostly dialogue, right? It's not necessarily like
And there's never a lot of it at once. So maybe a few characters say a few lines each, and then you have to decide which way you're going or how you want to handle an event and stuff like that.
Right.
And I like the little things you can mouse over when you're like me and forget what all these characters' names are and where all these places are. You mouse over them and it tells you, it's like, oh yeah, this is where you just were, or this is where you're going, or like, this is the character that they brought up before and here's a picture of them.
I am shocked that this is probably the first. I think this is the first time I've seen that system of just like having a freely mass overable dialogue, like items in your text boxes, so you can get your codex that way, as opposed to having like a codex like Mass Effect. Even though I don't mind the codex, like, it's really cool.
Zelda games always highlight like important words and people, but they never like have any way for you to remember what those are.
Yeah, or explain them like this. What this does, like I really love the fact that the world building is built into the tooltips, essentially, or what are essentially tooltips if you think about it. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, fantasy basketball not so hot on. I don't know. They use that combat for like certain other moments. Like there was a weird tower defense moment pretty early on that I was not into at all. I don't know. I just don't like it. It's weird because like it feels like it's 8 directional. It's not, but it feels like it. So it just feels off. Like, you know, you obviously have like a full analog stick, but it doesn't quite feel like it's full analog control.
It might be just animations. Maybe the animations.
Yeah, it's almost certainly because everything's like hand drawn, but that doesn't make a fun gameplay experience.
Exactly. Like there's a reason those fighting games take like fucking forever and massive teams to make, because hand drawn art is difficult and making.
So also like those are only 2D. You're never really like turning those characters around. The worst thing is they're facing the other way and you can just mirror it.
Exactly. Yeah. So trying to do that in a 3-dimensional like movement, even though it's like isometric, it's you can see why they would struggle, and that's probably why it doesn't feel quite right.
Also, just one last thing, because it was a while ago and I forgot about it. I restarted The Witcher 3 only because the only reason I want to mention that is because I played like 10 hours of it again. And the only reason I wanted to mention that is because I'm playing it with most of the HUD off and with Darker Nights turned on.
Wow. Okay.
And that is terrifying. Nice. You take out a torch and all of a sudden you realize, oh, wait, now I'm blind because I can't see past where the torch goes.
Oh man, that's cool. I love PC gaming sometimes. Just the mod scene and all that kind of stuff. It's really cool.
I just wanted to mention that because those mods are dope.
Hmm.
For
the record, for people at home, if I had to go back and change my game of the year that year, I'd probably make it Witcher instead of the Tales of Borderlands, only because that DLC is fucking great. Holy shit.
The first one is maybe the best RPG story I've ever played, and the second one is basically a full game worth of shit.
The second one's Blood and Wine, right?
It's fucking incredible. Right.
Okay, what was the first one?
Hearthstone?
Heart of Stone, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Heart of Stone.
It's about this immortal man that you're trying to whittle away. It's really cool.
Nice. But yeah, it's good to hear. Like, Witcher 3 is still a great game. And actually, I wonder if, like, now's probably about the time for, like, people always talk about with, like, the right way to play games, really, is, like, as soon as Witcher 3 is coming out, people started playing Witcher 2 for the first time. And it's like, oh no, all the mods are there, everything. Mm. Like, the game's cheap enough now that, like, if you don't care about Zeitgeist, yeah, now's a really good time to start playing Witcher 3.
Man, I could go on and on and on about how reading the books and playing The Witcher 3 made me hate The Witcher 2.
Really? I still appreciate Witcher 2, even though it's the same.
Because, I mean, The Witcher 2 is the only thing in that entire franchise out of all the books and the three games that means absolutely nothing towards the overarching narrative of that series of character.
It's a full side quest. It's a total side quest.
Makes me so angry.
The only reason I don't have any problem with it is because I played that first, right? Like, if it wasn't the first thing I'd played, because I didn't play Witcher 1, I would have, like, a deeper issue with it. But since I played that first, then Witcher 3, then read the books, it's not so bad. Kind of like
I totally enjoyed it at the time. Just looking back on it makes me sad.
Man. Ugh.
And there's one more going on here.
What else have you been playing?
I'm saying that it's also on your list.
Yeah, so I was going to talk about what I've been playing, but... turning back around to our man on the ground for Hurricane Harvey, this bit is going on too long, but Squiddle, there's a new game on your list.
Yes, there is. So I forgot, I didn't actually play this, but I was testing out Twitch's new desktop app, as one does every now and then, and I ran across somebody playing Observer. And I went to their YouTube page, and they had like 1 through 8 of a Let's Play. And so I was watching that, and he had just finished up the rest of the part that same day. So then I finished watching the entire thing in one day. And Observer is an absolutely amazing game. Even if you're not. Yes, it's horror, but I wasn't expecting it to be a horror game when I first saw it. It was more cyberpunk, dystopian future that turned into a horror-style thriller. And so definitely recommend checking that game out. At least watching a Let's Play is perfectly suited for this genre, what they're trying to go for here.
Nice. So yeah, I guess if you throw me a link, we'll put that in the show notes. But Observer.
Yeah, basically the basic thing, preference is you are a character that is hired by this global company that rules the world. You work for this company. Your job is to go to crime sites and investigate what happened. And your character has the ability to jack into people's minds if they're, you know, and see what they saw so that you can tell the story. So it's kind of a cross between that, like, cyberpunky with Inception almost in a weird way. So really, really cool.
Nice. Very cool, yeah. So the stuff I've been playing, with the exception of the first thing I'm going to talk about, doesn't sound as cool as Observer, but I guess I make bad choices with games I want to play. PUBG at the end of the show. That's all I'm going to say. But Nier Automata is a game that I've been told.
You could be playing Catriel's Mystery Journey.
Hold on. Speaking of Nier totally has hacking into people's minds to see their thoughts.
It does have that.
Is it Automata or is it
Automa.
Can someone please explain automata. To me that how that pronunciation became a thing?
I say automata because that is what I've heard from all official sources.
It comes from the word automaton, so it's automata. Okay. I don't understand where automata comes from.
I think automata just came around because it sounds more fancy.
I've been playing Nier Automata Empire. It's, yeah. It's an RTS with robots.
Nier Otters Matter. Save the Otters.
Nier the Ottoman Empire. That's what you've been playing. That's a good one.
It's the new Total War game. No, but yeah, no, it's.
I would play a Nier Total War game.
I'd play an Ottoman.
So did Nier win you back over, Thorbolton? Because I'm struggling with it.
I'm struggling. Well, I was struggling with it, and basically, I just set it to easy mode, and then just made like from Shinboy's suggestion. Mainline the story mode.
I might do that.
And let me actually look what my playtime is in this.
Because we have the same issue. Like we played the first bit of that game and bounced the fuck off it. Oh, right? I might fucking just do what you did.
I don't understand.
14 hours in.
I don't understand why people need to bounce it down to easy. I played that game on normal and died once.
It's because easy goes faster.
Yeah, I don't enjoy the combat at all. I thought I would from the demo, but then I played since the demo is the start of the game, and I've now played the start of the game 3 times. No,
I think this might be controversial, judging by what you guys are saying. I think that might be my favorite game I've played this year.
I get it because I've heard the story. Story goes.
I think the combat is fun enough. The character action stuff. I'm not a big character action fan, so if it's relatively simplistic, I'm like all for it. But I think actually the dual stick and shmup stuff is really fun.
Right. That I can see. Like those are probably actually my favorite parts of that game. When it's not trying to be a character action game.
I think like the way
it's been fun to watch the AI kick ass. Like it's been like, oh man, look at all that cool stuff I could be doing, but I don't want to commit the brain power to it right now.
Yeah, seeing all like the assists you get for turning down to easy makes me really like. I strongly considered it. I might just do that tomorrow. But do you think that like worked out well, Thorbs? Like to get you through that story? How long did it take you?
Well, I'm at 14 hours played so far, and I've put in some time into the second playthrough, which I will say, having done, as soon as the second playthrough started, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll see how this goes. Like,
second playthrough starts strong.
I was much more invested as soon as that second playthrough hit.
Okay.
The way that game is structured,
get to the good bit is difficult.
It's route A is like, here's the narrative of this game, right? And then B through, I guess it would be E, are like, right, no, here's the actual shit. Here's what's actually going on.
But yeah, it's Cynic, just only see. So when you go into your main menu.
I'll have to for Game of the Year, because I've heard it's the best story this year. So I need
when you go in your main menu, it'll tell you what the current main quest is. And actually, there's a different icon that looks very similar to all the other quest markers, but is slightly different. Use that to just follow the main story or like look up like, okay, what's the quest called that I need to look for?
Time estimate, Thurb, since you said you're at 14 hours, I kind of blew through like B, C, D, and E.
Yeah. I heard like every subsequent one is faster, especially with
that took maybe 12, 13 hours to get through A, and I finished that game with 25 hours total.
Okay. 25 hours is something I can do.
I had a few side quests recommended to me, and I just did those. Like, Thurb, if you're in B, I'm pretty sure it's in B. You know right where you start after the intro, but you get tossed to the open world? You're, like, on top of that building, and there's, like, the bridge over to the other, like, empty building across the way?
Mm-hmm.
There's a side quest in there that you should do, where it's this woman standing next to, like, her dead friend, and she asks you to find out what happened. And yeah, it is a route B because you need to hack into them to find out what happened. Do that side quest because that actually clarifies a lot of stuff that happens later on in the main story.
I will look for that.
But other than that, there's like a few of them that are worth doing. A lot of them are just flavor. But they
do
help.
Play as for the subsequent playthroughs?
It changes.
We don't want to give it away, but there's definitely something that changes that makes
it's crazy. It's like rapid fire who you're playing as. It's nuts.
I thought
each playthrough was a different protagonist.
So I will say that the one of the things that made me like to use the like easy mode, as it were, is because, especially like at least on the first playthrough, we'll see what the subsequent ones are like. I don't really know what to expect going forward, but some of those boss fights, like even with the AI, just like AI is just gonna like mop the floor. Took a good like I got up and made a sandwich during one of them because it's just the health bars are so big. And he's like, "Oh, this fight's just gonna take on forever."
You can just let the game play itself.
I don't remember that. Like, I played through, like I said, on normal, and was just like mashing my way through that game. And those boss fights did not take a long time at all.
Well, I also don't know, like the whole upgrade system of like, oh, you level up and you level up your weapons and all that. I don't know a thing. But like, what at the end of the first playthrough, what level was your weapon?
Which one? There's a bunch of them.
The main one you used.
Two or three.
Okay, I have a level 1 and a level 2.
Yeah, because, like, there's a guy, one of the parts where it goes, like, 2D, like, the weird castle, right before the boss there, there's a dude who can upgrade weapons to max level, but at the very least, he will show you or tell you what you need to upgrade each weapon to the next level. It'll give you the list of materials. You might have a lot of them just by picking them off of random enemies.
Okay.
But that's worth it, even for weapons you don't care about, if you have the materials, because each weapon has like a story associated with it. You can go in and look at the weapons and like read like a paragraph on each one.
This reminds me a lot of Transistor. And like, the world is very interesting. I want to know about it, but the path to get to it of like, oh no, you have to use every single different like combat style or weapon stance.
You don't have to use them. It's only if you want the weapon story.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about
using the weapon is inconsequential.
With Transistor, you had to use everything to develop the story. So much work. I just want to turn the page and read the next thing. If only there was like a thing outside the game that I could read all this stuff on.
Yeah.
If only.
Actually, wait. Is it, this probably sounds sacrilegious, but what if I just fucking watch it on YouTube? Like, can you just watch that game on YouTube? Like,
no.
The story beats
and
get it?
Okay. Because the ending in particular, the last ending, would not be nearly as effective. Okay. Like, A and B, maybe. Once you get into, like,
play
C.
Those to get to the others, so, yeah.
It's like, I'll be honest, like, the last two endings are super short. Like, you basically play through A, B, and C. At the end of C is a choice. One of the endings is C. One of them is D. And if you want to make the other one, you don't have to play through it again. You can just skip straight to that point.
Great.
Just choose the other one.
All right. Nice.
All right, yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about with Nier, Chimboy? But, like, that's where I'm at right now.
I love it so much. That game has things to say. That
become as gods, that's the thing you say.
That, like, no other game outside of maybe Yoko Taro's other stuff has to say.
Yeah, I've heard just so many glowing things about that story. I guess I just have to experience it.
It's not even necessarily, like, the main narrative of the world and the characters involved. It's just, like, it is what it tells you as the player. About the world, about our place in it, about, like, the hopelessness of life, about, like, the hope we can find in each other. It's crazy. I love it.
Man. I need to fucking play that. Oh,
and it is something that only would work as a game.
Right.
Yeah. So, something else that I'm not sure, you probably don't need to play Cynic. I mean, it's fun. I had a good time. I had an okay time with it. Guild Wars 2 Heart of Thorns story was a thing.
The story's bad.
God.
It's not great.
Wait, so, you sure it's not good as Nier? Like,
Near's much better, but in terms of just like Near's definitely something that is worth your time. Something that is possibly worth your time, Cynic, is Gilroy Suhara Thornstory.
Uh-huh. Oh wow, you're saying it's possibly worth my time? That's high praise, actually, to be honest. I was expecting it to be just hot garbage.
I'm gonna say it's not worth your time. Somewhere along the line, ArenaNet forgot how to make good MMO maps.
Oh man.
I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate, but I agree that like the map design of Maguma and like the Heart of Thorns thing is basically the experiment of we don't want to do mounts, but we want to do the next best thing of vertical mounts. Like the glider is effectively a vertical mount, and they just made the map an insane labyrinth that you have to like navigate through. And the annoying thing is like since doing the Heart of Thorns story and like exploring having to do trains with some groups in order to get like whatever the experience is they call nowadays to progress through the game. But then also just like seeing these little hidden places that I find through the story, I'm kind of like mad that they went this way because there's so much that I'm sure I'm still missing out on that I haven't seen. There's just like cool little spots.
The problem with those maps, and they've continued this into the season maps with the exception of maybe one or two, is that like they create these spaces that are interesting, but they're a pain in the ass to explore. One, because they're labyrinthine, and two, because there's enemies like just everywhere, all the time. Like,
right.
Part of the reason I like exploring the main base world and why I did it twice for world completion is because like, oh, I know if I see a point, I'm gonna run over there, and it's not gonna be like a fight for survival just to get to this thing.
Does it feel like everything is ore?
Yes. Everything's worse than ore. You go to ore now, you're like, oh, this isn't pleasant.
If everything was fucking ore.
You go to ore now, I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad. This is a nice stroll through the park.
God, I hated ore. You just want them to leave you the fuck alone and exactly. Let you traverse the fucking...
Cynic, it's not the thing of, like, they're always crippling you, like what used to happen in ore since they changed some of those things.
Sucking you towards them and shit.
It's just every one of them will just do like a quarter of your health.
Yeah, you can't get crippled if you're already dead.
Yeah. They don't slow you down, they just murder you.
Great.
But I mean that's why everyone just goes around in a giant pack of 40 that will just like thwomp anybody that gets in the way.
Right.
I don't know. Heart of Thorns
you liked it is what I'm hearing.
I didn't mess around in the new map because they did a preview weekend for the map for the new expansion. I got in there and played a little bit, but because Guild Wars 2 is a buggy mess of a game, I finished the tutorial instance where they give you your mounts and everything, and then I got kicked out into the open world, had a ton of connection issues, restarted the game, and was back in the open world, couldn't do the instance again, but my mount was gone.
Okay.
So that I just logged off?
Yeah.
The wrong reaction time.
That's a lot of running.
Although the more I think about it, the more I actually kind of like their mount strategy. Is like mounts are the things I care about least in MMOs out of the progression. So having them be situational is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's I like that it seems like they took the thing of like movement is not just auto run. At least it looked like with those mounts of like every mount can do a certain thing depending on the situation and like oh no it's. You run and you glide, or you jump and you leap. It reminds me a lot of, I don't know.
What you're saying is they need mount-based platforming puzzles.
Oh, sure. They're already in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm not surprised.
God.
Told you wouldn't want to, Cynic. But
no,
I think,
yeah, I'm good.
I think that more or less does it for the games, at least these guys want to talk about. Is there anything other than Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, Ballard, that we want to cover?
Yeah, the stuff I've been playing isn't interesting, so I'd not worth mentioning that I've been playing another 100 hours of Rocket League since I last spoke to you. But I want to talk about Monster Hunter if anyone cares. Does anyone care about Monster Hunter?
I'm interested in Monster Hunter.
I didn't know Rocket League was still a thing.
Oh yeah, it's massive. Sorry, what?
I have an important question for you. should I play Monster Hunter World? Oh, not World, the fantasy, not chibi, but the cartoony story Monster Hunter thing.
Oh, that's gosh, what is that thing called? Riders? It's based on, it's the one that the anime is based on, right? Mm. Or it's the other way around. Someone told me the anime is based on this game, the Riders, Monster Hunter Riders. Yeah, it's like Pokemon, so if you like that, yes, otherwise, no. I'm not
going to play it. I like Pokemon. I like Pokemon a lot.
I'm not going to play it on the basis of I don't believe in a Monster Hunter world where the monsters and the people get along. That's fair. Sure. Is inherently against my headcanon for what happens in the Monster Hunter games. But it's the only way I can feel good, you know, about murdering, you know, the 17th Tigrex that I've killed. And that I'm not ruining the ecosystem.
Of games like we do remember the names for, like World apparently has been getting pretty positive stuff from Gamescom. This is what I've seen has been pretty positive.
Yeah. So if you're a person who has no background in Monster Hunter and doesn't care about it at all, I'd actually recommend Giant Bomb's Quick Look because they came at it from that same angle. Unfortunately, Jason was ill. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there to give, you know, someone who's actually played a decent amount of that game's perspective on it. But Brad and Jeff did all right covering the point of view of, you know, we've been looking at Monster Hunter Rages and trying to work out why it's popular, and this one actually looks like it might be the one to do it. So, like, it's make or break, really, is what they were saying, is if we don't like this one, we just don't like Monster Hunter. And I can totally see that, because this is... Like, the main concern that I think I've talked about previously when we talked about it in the E3 podcast was that it was overly westernized and all of that. But everything I've seen from the Gamescom footage has me just so excited. It looks incredible.
Looks so good. Looks like a modern game, finally.
Yes, yeah. The quality of life features that people who are diehard fans of the franchise will say are ruining it sound great. And the... Like I saw people on Reddit today talking, and I was thinking the exact same thing, that the way they're making like an actual quote unquote ecosystem, like some dude posted, there's a guy called Arix on YouTube who does like weapon breakdowns of all the different weapons in the game, like, you know, showing what the new moves are and stuff in world. And in the background of one of his clips, there was just this bit where the new monster that they showed off, the Anjanath, I'm terrible at pronouncing it, basically just turns up in the zone, in the area that the guy is, and just goes over to a lake and just has a drink. And then walks off. And like, I was just thinking, I'm just going to go around and stalk these monsters and just watch what they do. I just want to see how this ecosystem works and, you know, not even hunt them, just observe. Because it does look like a more of a living world, which is exciting.
It's less Monster Hunter and more just naturalist, where it's just like you're observing them and occasionally taking one back for the queen or king to study.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, only non-lethal takedowns, just... You know, trank bombs and shock traps for the win.
I mean, unless they're sea turtles. If they're sea turtles, they're all fucked.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if any of you guys are super into Monster Hunter, but I wanted to talk about it because the footage from Gamescom looks excellent, and I'm really excited for it. Like, I'm genuinely considering taking time off work.
I watched the Giant Bomb video, and I'm definitely interested.
So, yeah, that's good. That's sick.
Ballard. I want to hear people giving it a try. Giving it a try, yeah.
When Monster Hunter World comes out, hit me up. I might be interested.
I will let you know. They haven't announced the date. That's the thing everyone was hoping for at Gamescom, but I think Gamescom's more or less wrapped up, right?
I think
today,
like,
or tomorrow is the last day.
Today is the last
day. Was Gamescom even... What was it even this year? Like, Microsoft brought fuck all. EA brought fuck all to their conferences. I assume like the you know, the normal like crowd show was still happening with game pre-release games to play, but in terms of, like, even just a couple years ago, Gamescom used to be like a almost second to E3, and now it's just a kind of a barren wasteland when it comes to actual, like, you know, new.
I mean, so was E3
things they haven't seen before. I don't know. E3 this year was pretty nice.
It was fine. I'm joking. I don't know. I've never expected massive announcements from Gamescom.
Gamescom is like just more of a pack.
Sometimes you usually get like, man, I don't know. Like last year,
go to Gamescom.
Sony didn't stop.
Should
going,
go to Gamescom. That'd be fun.
Decided.
No, I don't want to go to Gamescom. At the same time, I'd be willing to go to Gamescom, but I don't want to go to Gamescom.
Sorry, we should go
to Gamescom. Yeah, let's go to Gamescom. Well, Mr. Squiddle and I were planning on being not too far from there around this time next year.
Oh?
Yep.
Okay. So, Keep me in the loop on that. I am trying to learn German. So
how far is Cologne from Brussels? Not very, I don't think.
Yeah, not too bad.
I mean, it's a train ride.
It's a hop, skip, and a two pence, right?
Everything's a train ride in Europe.
I mean, that's technically true. You could get a train from London to Brussels. It's not that hard.
Yeah. Quick update here. The Nasty 24 pack of water has now skyrocketed to $24.
Ooh.
Texas area.
Great. How much is the, yeah. So can the water
literally falling from the sky?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's falling sideways, so it's hard to collect in a bucket.
That's why you have to spin around with a net to catch it while you're out there. So that's a little bit more difficult. You get dizzy and you fall over and you lose your water. So, you know, it's a process.
All right. But I believe that will do it. Stay tuned after the plugs for player of plug known battle, whatever.
Oh, you could do a post show Battlegrounds talk.
Well, right, Ballard and I both really want to talk about it, but I know you guys don't want to hear it. So we'll
hell no.
Lined up. I'm so sad.
Accurate.
All right.
I really want to get into Battlegrounds. Seems fun.
It is
I
fun.
I don't know. $20 is stopping me from getting.
No, I hate everything about it. That's why I played like 25 hours in 2 weeks. It's like Dota. People hate it, so they play it more.
Also,
it's fun.
Squiddle, it's a little weird hearing you say $25 is the thing that makes me
really
not want to get this game.
Well, I know. It's just, I'm very picky about games I put money into now. Like, I know I'm going to buy Wolfenstein because I love the genre. I love the series. Yeah.
Definitely.
Games that I know absolutely I'm going to love, but things that I'm even remotely timid on, I have a hard time throwing money at when it comes
to games. Also, it's 30 now. It's not 25.
Hey, for that amount of money, you can get 24 water bottles.
I know, right? So I could survive this hellacious storm. So, you know, I got to, you know, weigh my odds.
All right. So going through the plugs we have, there's No Clips episode of... No Clips Final Fantasy. Talking about the...
Yeah, they're Final Fantasy 14 doc. Yeah.
Microsoft's History of Empire, Age of Empires. I can't talk. Half-Life 3 story for the in the Pastebin file, basically talking about like the writer that we said in the news, Half-Life story, all that. I can do this, and then Dunkirk's music theory, basically breaking down how the only two composers I can think of when it comes to movies, Hans Zimmer and
Jeremy Scholl. Well, no, he's not a
no, but the guy who did Mad Max.
He has a
handle. Junkie.
Pseudonym?
Oh, yes. Totally the video I watched.
Yep,
the Duncan one.
Mm-hmm. No, I know how to do plugs. That's going to be in there. And then also, check out Observer in terms of, like, just its Steam page or look it up on YouTube. It's a cool cyberpunk game. What do we got here? What's this new one?
I added a fun YouTube channel I've been watching. He doesn't post often. He posts like once every 2 weeks, but it's called Just Write, and that's pretty much what it sounds like. It's about writing.
There's a video in here called "How to Pun Like a Master." I'm sold.
Oh, I'll check that. Yeah,
yeah. It's he goes through things like what Christopher Nolan does right when he writes things. What you should learn from Death Note. And like he goes by famous pieces of media and explains why they do what they do well, and just gives you things to think about in like short, like 8 to 10 minute videos. And also has these really fun Hobbit teardown videos where he like explains how shit a movie those fucking movies were. But no, he's great. So it's not very frequent, but he's only starting up now, and he's already got a couple hundred thousand or something subscribers because he does really good work. So Just Write on YouTube.
Nice.
Well, since I am here. You know what this means? What do I always do?
Music plug?
It is the music plug hour.
Nice.
Album that just came out by a band based out of Jeff Gerstmann's hometown of Petaluma, California.
Damn.
Cormorant. Cormorant has an interesting history that is actually somewhat related to games.
Well, they released the first two albums. First one, Metazoa, I regard as one of the best metal albums ever released. The second one, Dwellings, not quite as good, but still very good and has insane art. And then the lead songwriter, I think he played bass and also did vocals, left the band to go do QA for Telltale, oddly enough, to continue with my theory that Telltale ruins everything. and there was a third album without him. I forgot what it's something Diver, Earth Diver, that I don't like really. They added a bit more black metal and I don't think it worked too well. But the new album just came out a couple weeks ago called Diaspora. It's very good. It involves a lot of doom metal. It's one of those weird albums where it's four tracks, but I have the vinyl and it takes up four sides. The last track is 26 minutes. Even if you are not interested in the music, go take a look at the full album art because their art is always worth looking at. I don't know off the top of my head who does it, but it's always very good. That is my main music plug. And also yesterday, Napalm Records uploaded a video of the first track off of the new Unleash the Archers, where it is the band playing through it. And their previous stuff is really bad. And this album's really good. So good. I'm convinced it's an accident. Yeah. And it's fun to watch them play through it. Their singer's amazing.
Nice.
The song's called Awakening.
Yeah, thank you. It's always interesting and I'm happy to hear your different music plugs.
I don't know what happened with this new album. The album is called Apex. It's so much better than their previous stuff. I don't know whether it's production, songwriting, like they changed a few members. I don't know. It was like a perfect storm of it not being terrible.
Man. As when Shimbo starts talking about music, I get into this weird fugue state. We start looking at Twitter, and I just noted that it's 1 month till Stranger Things 2 comes out. So that's
wow.
Also, the chorus in the new Taylor single is really terrible.
What's Stranger Things again?
It's a show on Netflix that you should watch.
Everyone should watch.
That's that movie with those little kids. Okay, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I couldn't get past the second episode.
Okay, that's fair.
You're a man of low taste.
Well, so it is.
Excuse me. Take that back.
I'd rather play D&D than watch a show where people play D&D.
Going around the table with my time clock, I'm looking at six in the afternoon, six in the evening for Ballard, but also 3 in the morning for Cynic. So I think this is pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good show.
Hey, two more hours, you can finally start seeing that sun peek out.
Thanks for listening.
Oh, man, I'm tired.
And we'll see you guys next episode. Stay tuned for more PUBG talk after the music. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Guys, we should start an acapella group.
No, we should totally start an acapella group. We're not going to do that.
Stop. I'm going to sleep.
Enjoy your sleep.
we could be called the Scotch Catonics.
And we're back post show, and it's just you and me, Brad.
It's really quiet. Yeah.
It's very quiet.
Where's everyone gone?
I don't know. And the other thing, is this voice channel still set up for Singapore? I got an okay connection.
No, I think I've got a great connection to it. I have no idea where it is.
I think it auto once everyone else left.
US Central.
Alright, great. Punk is really good.
Yeah.
Bad. I mean, it's really bad too, but it's really good.
It's done bad things to my sleep pattern. Mm-hmm. It has loads of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those problems
are really great.
Yes. Some of them aren't. It probably shouldn't be an eSport. But that hasn't stopped me watching about 8 hours of the PUBG Invitational at Gamescom.
Yeah, like, it's the thing of, I don't know if it's an esport as much as I love watching people I'm fans of play crazy game modes. So you've been watching, tell me a little bit about the Gamescom Invitational. What
Invitational is fascinating. So basically there's community guides. This is the first time.
It's happening right now while we're talking, right?
It's on literally right now. I've got it open on the other monitor, muted. But it's the first time they've done a competition, a LAN competition. It's being run officially by the Blue Hole. Is that their name?
Yes, Blue Hole is the company, though apparently they got bought out by Tencent, I think.
Yeah, everyone's owned by Tencent. Frontier's part owned by Tencent now, so everyone's owned by Tencent. Just give up on the games industry, it's lost. But the tournament is officially being run by them. They've got community managers there. You know, the first time we're seeing, I don't know if the spectator tools have been used much, obviously, in community streams and stuff, but this is the first time they tried to do like casting and all that sort of thing. So it's rough around the edges, is what I'm trying to say. They had in the duos tournament, after the third game, they put the scoreboard up and it showed the wrong team winning, and everyone got angry about that. In the solos, some people had their computers crash or their peripherals stop working, and they didn't restart the match, like while they were in the lobby, and they didn't restart the match in time to let those people be able to play. There's been a swathe, I never know how to pronounce that word, load of issues with it. But it's still fascinating to watch. And like, I was watching the first person, like there's a lot of debate. One of the main debates with PUBG is first person or third person, right? What's your opinion?
I can understand the merits of first person. I prefer third person.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I think I'm the same.
Like, yes, third person, like, you know, gives away a lot of stuff, but it also just makes it a wonderful, it makes it a wonderful, like, the thinking game. And yes, the first person does as well, but first person is much more reliant on sound, which is one of the first senses to go when it comes to, well, it's really just sound and vision. But like, other people talking, people honking horns. Like, there are so many ways to disrupt that thing to collect information that like being in third person is good.
Yeah. I think what you said was echoed by one of the Cloud9 players about the it being more, not more strategical, but like the third person, it makes it kind of a different game. He compared it to, and maybe it wasn't a Cloud9 player, I can't remember. Most of the community seems to be in favor of first person because third person gives huge advantages based on, you know, depending on what your, you know, what the your positioning is like and so on. But he compared it to being more like a real time strategy game in a way.
Yeah.
No, like you're not just playing against the other people. You're playing against, so there's a bunch of things. One thing you have to play against is random drops in the map. Another thing is your positioning, and then working around between those two, like pushing other people, pushing yourself. You know, there's a whole bunch of things you have to balance that becomes more possible, I think, in third person than it is in first person.
But then even also beyond just those two things, it's where is the blue, like where's the zone currently, and where is it going to be, and what is the best path to take that is fighting all those different things, fighting like the blue zone creeping on you, and also the people. It's a good way to position around them. And to that end, like, it's make good maps. Make sure the maps that they are making are good, so they can take all the time they want on the two maps. I've seen, like, they released a little bit of something for the urban map. That's like a quarter of the size of the current one.
Really? Oh, yeah. I saw a new picture of the desert map, like a city from the desert map. Is that what you're referring to? Yeah. Because they did a preview of literally just like concept art, like a corner of the map to show you what like the artistic style of the map will be. But more recently, they did like a sort of helicopter view of a city in what I think was the desert map. Which I think will be the first one to come out.
I mean, the city map could be in a desert. I mean, for all we know as well. Like,
yeah.
We're talking about barren wastelands. But yeah, like I'm very interested in the new maps. But also, yeah, like going back on like I am happy to play on first person. I just haven't put enough time in it to get familiar with it because they are different games. It's the way you collect information, the way you play. My worry is that it's, I don't know. It can't be, like, first person always tends to be with games like DayZ and all that much more of a camping, like, just go prone and wait till you see movement game. But,
yeah.
Again, the Blue Zone. Like, you have to move. And so, I don't know. I'm glad they limit the FOV. I wish you could turn your head more.
What, in first person?
Yeah, in first person.
Yeah, I can see that.
Or, like,
do this thing.
Oh, the thing of, like, Outlast did that is, like, just a button press that you do to look behind you.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you can hold Alt, but there's also just a button you hold where you just turn your head around.
Yeah, the thing for me was when I did the Alt look around for the first time in third person, I was actually surprised you could look backwards because I was expecting it to be like armor. The first person look around feels the same as armor for me, so it feels right because I'm used to playing with a look around that locks at certain angles. So I haven't had any problems with it myself, but I can see why look backwards would be a useful option to have. Yeah, it's hard to say. But yeah, as I mentioned briefly on the podcast earlier, like I think I'm nearly at 30 hours now in PUBG over a couple of weeks, which is crazy. I haven't had a game grab me like that for a while. I was pulling like 2 a.m. shifts on PUBG when I had work at 7 the next day, which was a mistake.
I'm not going to say how many hours I'm at, but it is more than 30.
Yeah, I bet. Well, you were killing it on the Giant Bomb streams, so.
Yeah, so that's kind of the point where I've gotten some chicken dinners, and it's gotten the thing of, like, it got to the point where getting the chicken dinner was not the thing of, like, oh my gosh, I got it. It was the thing, all right, let's cue it for the next round. Let's go. Let's keep the ball rolling. And yeah. Just getting in crazy fights is more entertaining and stupid. And a lot of that is heightened, or I guess, like, those moments become more often when things happen, like the games industry community chicken dinner invitational, I think, is what the I became.
It had a name.
PUBG family dinner, I think, is the shorthand. But yeah, there's Jeff Grubb from GamesBeat, from VentureBeat, like one of those guys. Does a, and like other podcasts like Waypoint and whatnot, I've talked about it, but like he just invites a bunch of friends from that he knows in the games industry onto a Discord, and that's like there's like 20 or 30 of them, which is fair, but then enough other communities, like there's people from the Waypoint Discord and like a couple of the Giant Bomb Discords and like things like that, and they will all, it's the perfect amount of like they can fill up almost 100 people onto a custom server.
Yeah.
And so everyone who wants to play can get in. They have a huge number of people, and they can also just do fun stuff, and everyone has a good time watching their fans as well as just playing with the community and all that. And as of right now, it doesn't seem like it's like stream snipe heavy because the commentator, Jeff, like I feel like he might be doing a better job than these guys just with a moving camera. Okay. If you want esports, like not even esports, but if you want to watch a very compelling game, do you want to see the one that is just like somebody who is very good at switching cameras, just going from person to person? Or do you want that third person camera that is like a free roaming camera somewhere in the game?
Or somewhere I think you need both. I think, so you when you said these ones, you mean, are you referring to the PUBG Invitational?
Yeah, sorry, the PUBG Invitational.
Yeah. So I think they're close to getting it right, but they've got a few things wrong. The first thing that I think they've done right is they have multiple, from what I can tell, they have multiple. So they have live streams of everyone's like actual point of view. It's because they regularly switch to computers running in different languages. So the only thing I can think they're doing is they're literally capturing every single machine, and then they can switch to anyone's first person, well, not first person, but you know, actual perspective on the fly, what they're seeing as they're playing the game, which I think is good. And then they also have at least one PC doing a third person fly around camera. I think you're right, you do want that third person fly arounds to get the overview. And I like the way they cover the beginning of the game where they show the map spread out. I think that's interesting to see, even if it's not representative of your average PUBG game. That's cool to see, you know, just kind of how players distribute themselves over the map and stuff and see, oh, no one at all went to this place that is usually really, you know, really spicy. That's really weird and cool. But
I kind of want it to be like, so there's like everyone has 4-person squads and they split off on different parts of the map, like that sort of gameplay. Like the solos is a little bit too crazy to sort of watch, but like from a squad standpoint, because that is, yeah, in my opinion, the most interesting game mode. Duos a little bit, but like have a cameraman for every squad that is just like either getting 3rd-person views or 1st-person. Like they are just in charge of that squad, and then yeah, they can relay to a like producer coordinator. And then that person is then feeding to the commentators, here's what we want you guys to watch. And we'll like feed like cameras back and forth, and like the like each squad person be like, okay, no, I got cool fight happening from this perspective. And then you just have the like that sort of thing. So basically squads of cameramen to watch the squads of players to then coordinate with the commentators, I think is the best way.
No, I like that idea actually, because one thing I've seen people commenting at is that they think jumping around, as you said, is not working, because you jump to some dude who's just like in the firefight, yeah, and then you jump away from him, and then you're just in someone staring at a rock. And like what I've seen people suggesting is it would be better if there was like a continuous story and you actually followed the story of like a few important groups, like people you expect to do well or people that have been surprise performers in the tournament. What if their stream just followed those squad, like a few squads, like maybe 5 of the 30 squads, and told a more intimate story? Because that's what people tune in on Twitch to watch, is the intimate story of one person's journey in a game of PUBG.
That's kind of why I've been enjoying the family dinner, going back to the GamesBeat thing with Jeff. But like, yeah, it's, he doesn't like, he will occasionally watch like the community players if they're doing something crazy or cool, or like they're one of the last few survivors. But for the most part, he's talking about like the guys from Waypoint, the guys from Giant Bomb. Like it's various people of the industry that he's playing with. It's like, oh no, we're going to follow these guys' story because these are the people everyone wants to watch. And so there's only like 3 or 4 squads that he's jumping around on. And there is occasionally the thing of just like, oh, he misses some cool action thing, or he jumps at people who are staring at rock when there's a crazy thing happening across the map. But it's been nice to watch an amateur try and cover this as well. Or maybe not an amateur, but like just a single guy try and cover it. That makes me want the professionals to do a better job.
That definitely sounds like the right way to do it. I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see what you said, you know, more observers. You can't just have like one observer. You need a team of observers. I think with games with 100 people in, there's no way to get around that. And then I think also, potentially also, they could benefit from having a few side streams. Like I've seen, one of the things I really liked that StarCraft tried a couple of times was side streams of just the player's point of view for the whole game. So if you want, you can see what they see for the whole game. So what if there were side streams of following a squad? So this is squad 17 stream, and we just have, you know, have multiple cameras, like have third person view and first person view for that.
Here's what they commentary need. And this is something I'd like, have you played Dota?
Yeah.
Okay. Like I believe
I played more League than Dota, but I played Dota.
Like the whole thing with you can just watch the game happening. I want to say like with a short delay, but like live while it's happening with like the Invitational in the Dota client, I think is a thing that they managed.
Yes.
Yeah. So what if they just do that like a year from now or whatever for PUBG? But like you don't need to have the logistics on like on event side of everyone be able to watch a single player. People can watch the players they want to, but then also have the second stream of like the commentators going through for that, like for everybody.
That thing in Dota should be in just every game that wants to consider itself an esport ever, because the whole thing of A, having a perfect quality stream, B, being able to select your commentary track, and then C, being able to move the camera wherever you want and look at what you want to, is freaking excellent. I imagine it's really complicated and really hard to implement, especially if you're trying to sync, you know, hundreds, 100 players. But
well, they don't show the sync 100. Like, they've claimed to have a really good spectator and recording mode, which is how they're like collecting all their data. So just like have that, and then let people be able to access like a minute behind or 30 seconds behind of that file as it's developing.
The thing they need is relay servers. So I think what Dota has is, like, you don't want your spectators, you know, on the same server as your players. Basically, you wanna, as you said, give them like a delayed hard copy of the replay, play it back, but on a separate server.
Have a master file recording and then just let them access that video or that recording of it, rather, not video, but
yeah, definitely.
So that's the spectator. Esports side of it. Do we want to get into like some dumb stories? Anything that you like? What's some good moments that you've had? How goes your journey into Murder Island?
I'm really bad at remembering like specific moments. I think one of my favorite things recently was in a squad game. We were like, oh, well, you know, what'd be a great plan is if we took a boat and then drove it up the river into the center of the island so that we would get into the center of the circle without having to like go through anyone, because there's hardly going to be anyone actually on the river if we're driving a boat up it. And then we landed in like Milta or something stupid, realized that the entrance mouth to the river was on the other side of the island, didn't get in a boat until there was about a minute left on the timer, ran out of fuel halfway around the island. We had fuel to top it up, but realized that it would have only got us about 25% of the way we needed to go. So then had to jump out and then just sprint through the zone, or like sprint through the blue all the way to the zone, because it hit us. Like the zone had already got up to us at that point because it was at the north of the island. I think that might be the first time a few of us died to the zone, because I don't think I've died to the zone before that.
It's always, the moment of realization of like, oh no, I've learned that like boats can't travel that fast. Like the
boats are really slow. I did not realize how slow it is.
Like the number of people that want to go by boat, and it's like, no, boats have uses. Boats definitely have uses, but they're like, the more I learn of stuff to do in the game, it's like, oh no, cars are much better. So pro tip that like I can give to you and anybody listening who wants to like remember stuff or at least get better is, assuming you have an NVIDIA graphics card. And it this is something that I think they've just implemented into the game actually, but I'll explain what I do first is I just have Shadowplay running the whole time. Like it's GeForce Experience is running, and then I'll just like have the instant replay enabled to record like the last, it's at 5 minutes right now, but I think it might do 10 minutes for crazier stuff. But whenever something cool happens that I want to like remember or learn from, or very often when I die, I will just save it and then like, okay, where was that guy coming from? Why didn't I notice him? What could I have done better? And apparently, enough people have done that's just a feature you can enable in game. And it's assuming you have an NVIDIA graphics card that has the GeForce Experience with Shadowplay, there's apparently an option, or going to be an option, in the settings in PUBG to just have it automatically save those things whenever highlights happen. And I'm not sure if it's still a button that you press, or if like it just saves 30 seconds when you get a kill. I don't know.
That's kind of cool.
It's allowed me to... I've started posting things on my YouTube channel again of just like, oh, here's me dying horribly, or here's me like getting a chicken dinner, or like all the things in between. The highlight for me still is when I got a triple kill pretty much by myself. I mean, like I had two squad members die through the course of it and a third one get knocked down that I rescued, but I'm the one that did like all the actual fighting. I don't know. They might have done fighting as well. I don't know. But like I definitely charged one guy on a hill, took him out, did the action thing of switching to another gun, took out the second guy, then switched my pistol since that was all left, and took out the third guy.
Nice.
It's going to be hard to get better than that moment. But that is, again, why I've going to like promote to people to like look into the custom games, because if you can find a big enough community to do stuff like that, I was not able to participate in. I just got home from work. 50v50 shirts v skins.
I heard about this.
That basically they had to spawn the shirts all dropped on the out of the plane early, the skins all drop late, and like trying to interact with people who aren't in your squad, you don't see a name over, but like you were like, no, I don't want to shoot him because he's not wearing any clothes like me. We're on the same team.
So shirts had a significant advantage then?
Shirts had an advantage in that, like, there was no like advantage or disadvantage in, like, oh, this guy's not wearing any pants. That's the main way you can tell, is if they're, like, there's no armor to cover their legs, I guess. So it's easy enough to identify who's who, but it's just the thing of, like, seeing somebody who doesn't have a nameplate over their head, because your teammates all have blue names, not wanting to initially shoot them. Like, that is the thing of, like, oh, no, I guess, okay, play cool still. And then as you start getting closer to the circle and you start in, like, wait, that person's naked. We need to shoot him. and like reacting like that. And then, yeah, it finally ended with like the final circle. There's like three different squads, half squads, because enough people had died at that point, like held up on a rooftop, just shooting down on like the other groups they were like navigating around. And it was a very cool thing to watch. I guess in the plugs, I'll post the latest,
Gainsby
thing. It's like a 6-hour video. There's a lot there. So scrub through it, looking for cool moments, but PUBG is a really fun game. It's bad. There's a lot that the bad things can be improved.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not going to say all the jank needs to be improved, but there are things that need to be improved.
A lot of people are clamoring for the cars to get improved. I think the cars are just fine.
What aspect? The handling is perfect. I don't see...
The handling is... Some people don't like the physics. I love the physics.
I don't... there are things, but I'm fine with it. Yeah.
It's a video game. I don't know. This is the other side of it. And, like, I had the most fun with DayZ as early as it was in release. The more developed it got, the less fun it got. The less, like... It got too serious, I guess is the way to put it. Or it got too, like, realistic. It got too, like... You couldn't do dumb stuff in the game.
Yeah.
And that is what PUBG is at right now, is you can do a ton of dumb stuff. The whole thing of, like, there's a GIF or a video of, like, a guy in a DayZ just, like, ramping off a cliff, landing on top of the roof of a building to then get out and kill guys who are on the second floor of that building, killing his friend who's on the ground. And it's just like, that's a pretty dumb thing you could do that, like, most game, like, you shouldn't be able to do that in a game, is drive a car up onto the roof of a 3-story building.
I saw someone do something similar, but into, like, one of those balconies, like the really, really thin ones. You, like, drove the car, slammed it into the side of the building, got out of the car, landed on the balcony, and then shotgunned the dude who was standing in the balcony.
Yeah, there's... It was fucking great. I was actually at the Southern Island at the Air Force Base, and a guy ramped a motorcycle onto the second floor, got out, and I promptly killed him with my shotgun, and then said, "That was a really cool landing, dude." He said, "Oh, thanks." But yeah, this game is very good right now, and if you're on the fence, like, the more you wait, it might not be the same game later on. So
the other thing is price will certainly be going up soon, no doubt.
But I think I got enough out of my system for now talk about wise. Are you good?
I need to get some stuff into my system, mostly food.
Yes, I am at that point too. So yeah, thank you everybody for listening. If you listened this long, appreciate it. I will post, along with that Gainsby video in the plugs, like, look in the description. I'll also post a link to the Giant Bomb Discord channel. Not the one that we've always plugged about, the community one that Noob's part of. There's a different Discord that is like a couple thousand people, it feels like, from the Giant Bomb community, like all the fans. And it's pretty well moderated. It's pretty well organized and all that. But if you want to be part of the future Gainsby Venture Beat, like the family dinner invitational things, or just want to play games like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds with other people, that is a good way to do it with some duders of a good community. So I will post that in the links as well. But yeah. Pollard. Thank you for joining us. This was a fun morning for me. I hope you have a good afternoon.
Indeed, as always. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thank you.